Thanks, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and it's Wendy. And we're here and you're here. 312-981-7200 if you'd like to prove it. Not that you need to. We believe you're here.
We believe it.
Yeah, we believe it. My wife, by the way, scolded me last night, yesterday when I got home, because we were talking with Steve Bertrand, and Steve brought up a term that I was not familiar with, and I don't know if you were familiar with it, but
never
you didn't know
it.
What it was.
We both were wrong, and I was all like smarty pants, like, are you kidding? This is what it is, and I was completely off.
Yeah.
Oh, your wife would know, sure.
Terry also, much like Steve, at some point in her childhood, went bean walking.
Walk the beans.
Walking the beans.
I'm walking. Yes, indeed.
No, you're mocking. That's what you're doing. You're mocking.
You're mocking the beans. You're bean mocking, not bean walking. So Steve just threw it out very casually, like, well, who amongst us hasn't bean walked a couple of times?
No, you walk the beans.
Right,
walk
it's
the beans.
Walk the beans.
You don't bean walk. Michael
walk
Jackson
the plank.
Bean walk.
Right. Wendy grew up in a pirate household where they...
That's my middle initial.
We're going to bean walking.
So I had never heard of it.
Nor have I.
But your guess was as good as any, which is just...
You gather the beans, you put them in a bushel, and you walk them to the farmhouse to go to market or whatever.
It's not a good guess, but it's as good as any of the ones you had.
Well, that would be walking with beans in your hand.
Right, and who would do that?
Yeah, but you're not...
It made sense to me. It really, like, I went, well, that's probably what goes on in a farming community after the harvest, the big harvest.
After they build the barn for their neighbors.
Right.
People walk the beans to the market.
That's a daily occurrence, I would think, in a farm community. I would think.
But it just means bean walking is walking down the rows of beans to pick the weeds out.
Yeah, right. You're weeding the bean fields.
And then somebody talked about the corn. What was it?
Detasseling?
No, unintentional corn.
Oh,
volunteering.
Yeah.
Corn volunteering.
Unintentional corn. That's what it is, but...
Corn volunteering, never more important than in a time of war, Wendy.
No, it's volunteer corn.
You should understand volunteer corn, Wendy. You're a gardener.
I know. Once it was explained to me by a listener, it's when you do rotate the crops, which I just thought that was something that farmers said. I didn't know you did it.
Oh, yeah.
No, because when you're walking the beans, you've got the bushel basket and you flip it. That's rotating the crops.
I didn't know any of the don't.
He's being funny.
No, I think he's being legit. Steve, you're being
legit,
right?
Was that a farmer's joke?
That was a farmer's joke.
Yeah,
oh, it
see?
Is? Bump, ba-dum, bump, 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 bump. That's a farmer's song. We are farmers. Do farmers sing that together when they
we
get...
We are bean walkers.
I bet they do. When they get after the harvest festival, they probably sing that song
together. They all gather in the dale.
Right. And do they say E-I-E-I-O a lot? I bet they do.
Not as much as they used to.
Oh.
The cow goes moo.
Do they sing that? That's a good farm song.
Wink.
That's a good farm song.
All right, so volunteer corn is when you have corn and then you harvest the corn and you plant soybeans there the next year. Sometimes there are errant kernels that grow into corn, and that's it? Am I close?
Yeah, I don't know if it's always about rotating or just, you know, it might have been an animal dropping or something, but yeah, it's a...
So what does it grow, a poo tree? What?
They don't make those.
They would eat the corn, but yeah, it's just a kernel. It's a corn plant that grows up in a bean field, unwanted.
Thank you, Colonel.
And you have perennials, and you have sometimes have a flower that grows where you didn't plant it.
Right, goldenrod completely comes up all over the place.
Yeah.
I'm sure glad Orion isn't here to hear
us. I know. We said this yesterday, Steve.
Orion.
Steve, I'm doing okay, though. Am I not?
No, that's fine.
Steve, I pictured Orion hearing this and driving to Jameson Steakhouse.
Off the road.
And just,
he loves that place.
It's like being home. Him steering off the road, just saying, I can't handle
Idiots.
The fact that these people have no idea about farming. But
we didn't grow up on a farm.
Ask me questions about the suburbs. I can answer them all day long. I know a whole bunch of suburban
I'm good at mall questions.
Yeah.
I'll never forget, I met a city kid once, and he goes, you know, Steve, he says, I understand what a cow is.
Well, that was good.
He said, but what's a cattle?
Oh. Oh.
All right. The answer is?
Well, it's more than what it's
a... It's the group of cows.
Cows, yeah.
A herd.
Right.
Yeah.
You refer to the plural as cattle.
When you were a kid, Steve, did you imagine that your life would be also like a farming life? Did you think that would be your career? You knew not. But your parents—that's what your parents had, right?
They both were raised on farms. I was raised in town.
Oh, all right.
Not in the country. That's another phrase that's gone. Where do you live? I live out in the country.
Yeah, no one says that anymore. That's kind of gone.
I don't know if this text is from Orion. I don't know if he has a 630 number, but here's plain and simply what it says. You two are idiots.
Well, we knew that. I mean, that's not a new development.
It's nothing new to
us. We're just proving
it. He does have a 630 number, by the way.
Oh, I'm sure it's him. All right. I have a I have a barn question.
All right.
Should we take a break?
Yeah.
Can I ask it? And
yeah.
If Orion's listening, which I'm sure he's not because he's on vacay, I really have a barn question.
All right.
Because, you know, I go out to the country when I go to my beach club.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of corn fields
sure.
and soybean fields, and there are a lot of barns, and I have a barn question
All right.
that I would like to pose to Steve Bertrand or Steve Alexander.
Or anyone named Steve, really. If
yes.
your name is Steve and you can answer Wendy's question, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill and Wendy. We're a picking and a grinning. Are you picking or grinning?
I want to be grinning, quite honestly.
Don't pick at it. Grin at it, but do not pick at it.
All right.
There's good body.
Steve's a little bit country. We're a little bit rock and roll. Mm-hmm. And I have a barn question. I have noticed, I'm kind of intrigued by barns. So a lot of times when we go to our little beach club, I take pictures of barns. And I'm noticing that year after year, there are barns that become dilapidated.
Sure.
And they are just left to cave in on themselves and mm-hmm. plants go through it. Is there some ordinance where you can't tear down a barn?
Steve, are you listening?
Okay. They're laughing at you.
I know.
By the way,
I don't care.
No, all the Steves are laughing at
you. I'm not laughing. I think you could better answer it. But no, it just costs money yeah. to tear down a barn. But they don't really use the cribs like they used to, right, Steve?
The cribs? For babies?
No.
Corn cribs, no. Oh. No, yeah, Are Steve's those? Right there. It's expensive to tear down, and you have to do something with the rubble, so, you know, and it's not hurting anybody out there, so just leave it be.
It makes some great pictures that are on my wall because I love when it's just, and every year we go, every summer we go out there, it's like it gets worse and worse.
Right.
And then this year we were looking for the barn, and it was just a few pieces of 2x4s on the ground with trees growing in it.
I don't know if it is anymore, but barn wood used to be really in demand for new construction. You know,
it
because
is
why?
It's,
just because it has some
it's
history?
Cool.
Is that? But is the wood itself any different from regular
it's
building
just
wood?
It's weathered and has a really interesting look.
Rustic.
And, yes,
yeah.
And go online right now and try and buy like barn doors that they're old barn doors that
sure.
you can install in your house.
We have an old barn window from my dad's farm.
Oh, that's cool.
Oh, that's cool.
Hanging in our house.
Did you turn it into a mirror?
We put little pictures in each of the quadrants.
That's excellent. That's I didn't even think of that as an option. That's really nice.
I want a barn wood mantle, which I bought a piece of barn wood. At the Kane County Fair, it was really cheap, and it was just reclaimed barnwood, like a big,
yeah.
big. It's a part of a panel of a barn,
yeah.
And it's been sitting on my porch for 2 years because I haven't had anybody to put it up for a mantle.
Oh.
I sanded it down a little
yeah.
bit because I didn't want splinters, but
right.
that is very, very popular.
Yeah. Well, on your way to the beach, the club, or whatever next time, just stop, grab something.
Will they
Can
let
I do? Isn't that trespassing and
well,
stealing?
Well, ask for the farmer's permission.
How do you find a farmer?
And shake a farmer's hand, Wendy, and when you're shaking his hand,
if
say,
I
by the way,
him,
I'm going to take some of your wood.
What? I mean, it's not
I'm
that
I'm a Cubs
close.
Fan. We have a wall made out of carry wood at our house. Was he upset?
Travis Wood.
Travis Wood. So upset.
Go ahead, Steve.
So, Joe, we were talking about the barns that just become dilapidated and fall into the ground. There's another use for these barns?
I've seen it before where these dilapidated barns, they'll invite the volunteer fire department out and set them on fire just so they can practice putting things out.
Oh,
because that's a great idea.
It's great practice for them, you know.
But now you wouldn't do that in the middle of a cornfield because you'd, of course, scorch the corn. Popcorn.
Oh, yeah. Right. That's true. You solve two
you
problems.
You might want to wait till the crops are in when you do that.
Okay, so after they've harvested?
Yes.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Harvesting, yeah.
Don't make fun of me, Joe. I grew up in the suburbs.
I'm laughing with everybody else, not at you.
Not directly at you.
All right, thank you, Joe. Appreciate it.
Joe sounded like ABC's Alex Stone.
He did a little
he?
Bit, yeah,
yeah.
A young one.
A younger Alex Stone.
Is this Kim? Hi, Kim.
Hi, Wendy. How are you?
I love barnwood.
I so do I. My husband and I.
You've
yeah,
got to stop saying that.
Yeah, but I'm right there. We watched a lot of these barns falling down, so we went and helped ourselves. I know it's probably naughty, but and we helped ourselves to this gorgeous old wood, and we used to put it. We did walls with it,
yep.
Stairs. We made, you know, we have some absolutely gorgeous pieces made out of this old barn wood that you can't find a farmer to ask permission.
I know, because the barn is so far from their house. I would shake a farmer's hand, but I can't find him or her.
But if you were a farmer, though, and you looked out across your field and you saw you and your cohorts, I know you travel in a gang, but just stealing wood from...
I bet he'd say, great, I don't have to deal with it. He just left the barn to fall down.
I guess.
The one guy we did find said, back a truck up, take all you want.
Oh.
The one barn that we picked apart finally was knocked down entirely, and a whole bunch of McMansions went up in its place. So I think we helped out.
We helped out
a whole bunch of stuff. Yeah, and the guy said, "With pleasure, help yourself." And we have some gorgeous walls and stairs and furniture because of it.
With pleasure, I like barn wood. With pleasure,
yes.
There you go.
Yes.
Thank you, Kim. Really appreciate it. And Ed wants to jump in on barn talk.
All right.
Howdy. Hi, Ed. Oops, my fault.
One of the reasons that wood is so expensive or good or to real good woodworkers is that's old growth wood. You know, when they built these barns, it was
thicker wood.
It was a tight grain. It was a stronger, better wood. Now we have, you know,
because we harvest trees so quickly that it doesn't get a chance to get really big.
And the grain is farther apart, and it's not as strong. The wood's not as strong, and it's not as pretty.
Old wood is good wood. So, with pleasure.
Yes.
You got it.
Sure, words have never been spoken.
Ed, thank
you. Either need it or you get it.
But, yes.
Thank you.
I don't know what that means, but it sounds correct.
I'm on break. I don't really know. But I guess that makes complete sense, where it would just cost too much money to have a crew come. Wouldn't it be fun if your dad or your grandfather was a farmer and you could just go out there with sledgehammers and just
take what you needed
and just break it down? That's just fun.
Yeah.
Get out your aggression. Just
Some of them look like you could just walk up to them and push them over.
Or blow on it.
And it's funny because if you drive, I don't know, an hour and 15 or an hour and 20 minutes away from the city in almost any direction, just take a ride up and down the roads and you see exactly that. You see what seemed to be farms that were just flourishing, I don't know, 15, 20, 25 years ago, just all about to tip over.
It is the barn, but then you look at their brand new house that they had built. So,
and that's in great shape.
Yeah, because they're just going to build a new barn.
Don't need the barn.
Right.
I guess so.
And you said the
corn.
It's
all in the cloud now. You keep everything on the cloud now.
The corn cribs, are those things that look like a cylinder made out of chicken wire?
No, those are silos.
No, they look a lot like barns, not quite as big usually.
The silo is the long cylindrical building, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. All right.
There she goes again.
if you could have seen his hand.
Wendy just, faded away.
Back into, in the barn.
Yep.
But the cribs, right? So my grandpa had a crib, and he would park his car in the crib, but it had slats on either side that they would fill up with the corn cobs.
Oh.
Is the ears of corn.
Is that where the term, hey, you coming to my crib?
That's where people started saying it, yeah.
And shake my hand in my crib.
Right.
Hey, Rich.
Hey, how you doing, guys?
We're confused.
I live in Pawpaw, Illinois, and there are barns falling apart all around this section. I could probably hook you up with something there, Wendy, if you really wanted to get serious and come out there. But also, you got to remember, you know, trying to go and take wood without being asked, there are a lot of farmers who own guns out here.
That's a good point.
Some wouldn't appreciate just taking what you think you can get. But there's also liability issues, too, you know, getting hurt while you're doing it.
That's a good point. So shake a farmer's hand and ask them, because permission is better than a shotgun.
Always.
I don't think they would shoot you, but
pitchfork stabbing.
Yeah.
All right, Rich, how long would it take me to get to Pawpaw?
Well, I'm just over the DeKalb County line, so you're probably looking at about from where you are in LaGrange, I think, about an hour and a half.
Oh, that's not
bad.
That's
an easy ride.
I have a friend I'd like to go see there who just bought a new farm and has a couple of horses. Maybe I'll head on out to Pawpaw.
All right.
Is it next to Mama?
No.
I know that that is the dumbest joke ever. I feel like I'm in third grade. Thank you for pretend laughing, Rich. I appreciate it.
You should write Dixie Riddle Cups for farmers.
I did.
That wasn't a pretend laugh. That was a scoff.
Right.
Rich, thank you for calling. I appreciate it.
Yeah, you're welcome.
All right, we need to take a break. Once again, Wendy, what is the phrase that pays?
I don't know which one.
I love
one.
Farmwood.
Barnwood.
Barnwood.
I like
right.
old Barnwood.
Sure. It gives her pleasure, I think yep, she said it was.
Something like that.
Go ahead, Nick DiGilio.
Have at it.
What did he do before I got here?
It was an empty show. He can only do one day a week. He'd only come in on Fridays until you came here. All right, we've got a big show for you. Believe me, it's us. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. Thank you, Steve. Steve, I want to ask you a question. Did your mom work when you were growing up?
Yeah, from time to time, back and forth, yeah.
So not full time?
She had a couple of different jobs during when I was a kid.
Bill, your mom worked when you were growing up, but not full time, right?
She had a dance studio, and she worked usually 3 days a week, full days. But so I don't know if that is considered full time. Close.
And she was in the home in case something
yeah.
catastrophic
sure,
happened.
Absolutely.
My dad died when I was 10, and that's when my mom had to go to work full time.
Oh, yeah.
Prior to that, she was home.
Uh-huh.
And I have felt guilty for going to work while having kids.
Really?
A little bit. A lot of working moms, in my opinion, feel like, you know, when I had Michael, I was able to take about 8 to 10 months off because we were in between jobs.
Mm-hmm.
We had been let go at one place, hadn't
mm-hmm.
found another one. With Dylan, it was 6 weeks, and there you go to daycare at somebody's house, which luckily I love the people.
Yeah, you're lucky.
But it's you always have some regrets when you're a working mom. And I came across this article, which I would like to share with every working mom out there. There's the toxic myth that working moms fail their kids is fueled by decades-old bad science. There's an accompanying video at the top of the page, and we'll share the link. And senior video producer for Quartz, who put this video together, Solana Pine, on the line with us. Hi, Solana.
Hi there.
All right. Are you a mom?
I am a mom. Yeah, I have two young kids, 2 and almost 4, 2 girls.
And are you a stay-at-home mom?
I am not. I work full-time.
Okay. And wasn't there a tinge of guilt when everybody says you want to worry about your career. I was 35 when I got married because I wanted to get my career going beforehand, and I wanted to keep my career going. But people, a lot of stay-at-home moms make you feel guilty. Did that ever happen to you?
You know, it wasn't just I definitely felt guilty. And I would say it wasn't the stay-at-home moms that made me feel guilty. I think it was family, you know. It was even people who were really supportive of my career, like my parents. Still, the moment I had kids, then asked if I was going to stay home. And those kinds of questions that you get when you're pregnant, when you just have a kid, from everyone, and questions that were never asked of my husband, who, of course, also works full-time.
Well, that's the interesting double standard is people ask women all the time, how could you possibly balance a career and a family? But nobody ever asks a guy that. That's a horrible double standard.
Yeah, no, exactly. And it was that guilt that sort of started the reporting that became the video and the piece. I was reading a book, and I noticed this statistic from the early 90s, which said parents spent 40% less time with their kids. And this book I was reading pointed out working parents spent 40% less time with their, actually, I'm getting this entirely wrong. Parents spent 40% less time with their kids in the 80s than they had in the 60s. And that statistic was wrong, but it was repeated by everyone and by politicians, especially on both sides of the aisle. And it felt to me like obvious received wisdom that obviously working parents were spending less time with their kids. And when I started looking at the data, things have changed a lot, and parents now spend overall more time with their children.
And explain that, because that's what was fascinating to me. Even though you're not a stay-at-home mom, you're not physically there with them as much time. The quality time spent is
right.
amazing.
Yeah, there's a lot of different research on this, and the best data comes from these things called time diaries, where they have parents, and it's usually a mom, who will write down in, I think it's 15-minute or 20-minute, half an hour increments, what they did with their day, basically. And so they can compare over time how that changes. And one of the things that they found is overall, this primary care time, the time that you spend, you know, it's changing diapers or feeding kids or reading to them or doing all of that, has gone up so that a working mom does as much of that in, did as much of that in 2000 as a stay-at-home mom did in 1975. And so some of that is just changing ways of parenting, I think. There's less, you know, go out and play, get out of the house, and there's more emphasis on spending time with your kids. Some of that is that every hour that a mom works is not stolen, you know, from her kids because children are in school and a lot of parents in general are trying to time their schedules, you know, to have free time with their kids. And then, you know, some of that is on average also stay-at-home moms are spending more time with their kids. But if you look at total time. So it's a bunch of things. And then there's a separate analysis, which is just looking at this quality time, eating dinner, reading to them. And there's just a lot more emphasis on that now than there used to be. And researchers who've studied it found that working moms now do about as much of that as even stay-at-home moms.
I was a tyrant about having our family eat together every single night. And then last year, my older son got a job and wouldn't come home till 8 o'clock. So I would postpone dinner till 8 o'clock, which isn't good when you got a younger one who's hungry. So right. I'm still trying to juggle that and figure that out. But there's always family time around the table sometime in the night, even if it's for dessert or whatever. And, you know, when you're a working mom, sometimes we were doing homework at 10:30 last night together, and it was quality time.
Sure.
I got to tell you, I know it was not traditional. I know a lot of people have a rigid schedule where homework time is between 4 and 5, but sometimes you got to deviate from the plan.
Right, exactly. And that's what parents are doing, you know, to balance this. It's not easy, but that's what it shows is that, you know, that might have been that 10:30 at night slot might have been a time that you would be watching TV or spending time with your husband or doing something else. And those are the sorts of things that parents are kind of trading off to spend the quality time with their kids, especially if they're working.
Solana, as far as you know, is there any kind of data or research showing how kids fare overall, and this could be emotionally or from a career standpoint, from having one or two stay-at-home parents as opposed to one or two parents who are working full-time? Is there any kind of research showing that one does far better or far worse than the other?
Yeah, so this is something, obviously, that people want to study and have studied. And there have been recent reports that have gotten a lot of attention showing that you know, kids of working moms are doing really well, like their daughters tend to do better in a bunch of ways. Their sons tend to be more have like a better kind of emotional intelligence. Amy Shin, who we feature in our documentary, is a sociologist who looked at for younger kids the sort of quality versus quantity and outcomes. And there it was an interesting study because one of the things that she found was that kids of stay-at-home moms who are spending more time with their kids did not do better either intellectually or sort of socially in these outcomes. And there was actually this weird slight negative correlation, so meaning that she saw children whose moms were spending more time with them did slightly worse on some of the sort of intellectual and social metrics. But what she found was that was entirely correlated to things like watching television. And so for the population she was looking at, it was that some of the kids who were with their moms more ended up watching more TV, and those kinds of things we all know are not great
sure.
for our kids. That was what was linked to these developmental outcomes. And I think it just points to this thing, which is that total time is not automatically better, that there are all kinds of things that affect our kids. And we just sometimes, I think, are myopically focused on just, am I there? How much am I there? Like, how much time am I there for?
And things change. You still have little ones. Solana Pine on the line with us. I have teenage boys. Bill, your girls have blossomed into 19-year-old women.
Yeah.
So they don't need a lot of help or assistance. Conversation, yes.
Mm-hmm.
And so my husband is home. He works from home. So that's, I feel good that he's there when they come home from school, because teenage boys sometimes need a ride somewhere, or
right.
you just want to keep an eye over the kids. So we do the best we can. In this day and age, it seems both parents have to work to afford the houses that we want. So this is the way it's going to be. I don't. Do you see it turning back to Leave It to Beaver and June and Ward being there, having his cocktail ready and dinner on the table?
Right. I definitely don't think it will. And yeah, and that's the thing is, you know, like income is hugely associated with positive stuff for kids and their development. You know, it's access to good schools, it's safe neighborhoods, it's houses, all sorts of things that happen when both parents work, right? So, so there are tons of benefits in that sense. And yeah, and in the research that's been done, actually, the strongest effects of time do seem to be, at least in a recent study, in adolescence. It's not significantly more time. It's like the difference of having dinner with your kids or not. But that was a recent study that failed to find any kind of correlation between total time and outcomes for kids at younger ages. Did find this a slight correlation for adolescents, where it's like having someone, you know, having dinner with them, that kind of conversation does seem to be pretty important.
It opens up the doors to communication, that's for sure. Solana Pine on the line with us, senior video producer for Quartz. She's done a lot of projects in the video world, and this video we're talking about is a documentary. It's called The Mommy Wars. We put a link to the article on our Facebook page. It's up there now, Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder. 312-981-7200. If you have any questions, we'll continue with Solana Pine next, 720 WGN.
Solana Pine is our guest, senior vice producer for Quartz. Go to QZ.com. It's the shortest website allowable by law. She's talking about the myths that working moms face, most of them untrue, as it turns out.
And Solana, we have a listener who wants to jump into the conversation. Carol, you were a working mom and had how many kids?
I had 5 kids under 5, and I was a teacher, so I had the summers off, which was good. But I was a working mother. I did all my own cooking. We happened to have a babysitter that would come to the house, but at that time it cost $40 a week to have the lady come and watch the kids. And when I had 3 kids, under 5, I had twins, and I didn't expect to go back to work. And she said, aren't you going to go back to work? And I said, would you watch all of them? And she said, yeah.
Wow.
So, and then and none of them got in trouble. They've all got fine, you know, good lives. And, you know, so it all depends.
It's a case-by-case situation. And if someone wants to stay home, Solana, you're cool with that. If someone wants to work, I think a working mom does a couple of things. First of all, it shows your kids that mom and dad can share some of the responsibilities, and there aren't just mom jobs and dad jobs.
Sure.
I think that's an important thing. And it also makes you, I love being on the radio. That helps me be happy, and it's who I am, and they see a better side of me because I'm able to do that. Would you agree with that, Solana?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely true. It's really I think the most important thing is that both parents are able to do things that, you know, make them happy and to make the choice that's right for their family. You know, it's really about being happy with that choice and being able to do it, not being forced economically to have to stay home because childcare is so expensive, or being forced to work more than you want to for, you know, the same reasons, I think.
And Carol, back to you. Did you have to work? Was your husband?
No,
you just,
I wanted to work,
see?
And I liked it. I enjoyed it. I was, you know, I didn't go leave for school until the kids went to school. I was home shortly after they got back. I worked in the town that we lived in, so it was very convenient, and I enjoyed working.
And what better way to take a break from a house full of kids than go to a job where you got a room full of kids? That's
well,
the best.
You know, that's really funny because everybody said, oh, you must love children. I said, yeah, my own. You know,
I'm so with you on that, Carol. I'm not crazy about other people's kids.
No, I mean, you know, that was my job. You know,
right.
And I loved teaching. I taught for 40 years, and I loved it.
Awesome.
And I was very glad to retire, you know, but I waited till I was 60, And I've been traveling now all year long, and I volunteer. It's wonderful.
Oh, good.
Excellent. Thank you so much for calling. We appreciate that. Solano, so that proves it. I mean, you do what's best for your family, but children can grow up to be happy and healthy and productive even though mom is at work.
Absolutely. And, yeah, I mean, I just think you look back at your own childhood, and I think about my relationship with my parents, and it wasn't really about who was there more. It was about, you know, our relationship, the things we did when we were together.
And Solana, aren't kids, I always give kids credit as being extremely resilient. Like, they kind of figure out, okay, for a while, my mom or my dad or both are home for me, but there are plenty of other times where they can't be because of careers. Kids get it. They understand that.
I think that's true. Yeah, no, for sure. And that's, I think, you know, there's all sorts of talk about how much should we really be there doing everything for our children, which is a separate debate. But obviously, there are lots of benefits to letting them figure things out.
And I think back, even when my mom was home, before she went to work when I was the age of 10, we weren't as close as I am to my kids.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just a different time, and I think our kids converse with us more than we did our parents.
I think that's definitely true. Yeah, I mean, and I think if you, there's just so much more emphasis about on involving your kids in your lives in a way that there didn't used to be. That wasn't the norm.
Let's get Laura in here real quick before we wrap up. Laura, this is Solana Pine, and we are talking about working moms. Now, you're a single mom. This changes things a bit, doesn't it?
Well, you know, my kids are grown, but this has always been kind of have irked me for many, many years. I would watch programs on Oprah, blah, 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 if I was not working. Nobody ever talks about single mothers. We don't, unless, you know, we were given a really good divorce settlement,
right,
which I wasn't.
You have to go to work.
We have to work. So we've got other stigmas, too. I think it's more commonplace, unfortunately, now. But single mothers always have a stigma of, oh, you're the divorced mother. Your kids are running around, and they're not. You know, there were no set schedules. You know, we had to do the best we can. And luckily, my son's a PhD, and my daughter's a lawyer. So
you did pretty well, Laura.
I did pretty good. But in her research, nobody ever talks about the single parent. You know, there's a double burden on mothers. And I know, you know, it's like we have to work. We've got to be good mothers, you know.
Handle the house, the cleaning, the cooking, the laundry.
Everything. We are mothers and fathers. And while my kids went back and forth with their father, we always got stuck with all the double duty, triple duty. And for years, single mothers have never been addressed in this whole realm of working or stay-at-home moms. So what does she have to say about
Solano,
that?
Solano, we only have a minute here, so what do you have to say?
I think that's absolutely true. I do think that this debate, this single-minded focus on total time that moms especially spend with kids is relevant for both single moms and parents, moms in two-couple families, right? And it's a bad focus for both reasons, but it's also why the debate of like moms choosing to work or not is often just beside the point, and single moms are a perfect example of that, and why policies that make it easier for parents to combine work and family are so important, because, you know, again, this really applies to single moms. I think you need flexible work schedules, you need help with childcare, all of those things. And then finally, single moms are just proof that total time with kids, you know, that a stay-at-home mom isn't essential. And we've gotten a ton of really, I think, strong feedback from kids whose moms did work, whose moms were single, on this piece for all of these reasons.
Laura, great job. Way to represent for the single moms out there. We appreciate it. And so nice to talk to you. Solana Pine, something everyone should check out. The documentary is called The Mommy Wars. We have a link to this whole article. It's really an eye-opener, because still some twinges of guilt for being a working mom. Solana Pine, senior video producer for Quartz. You can go to QZ.com. Do you have a website or anything else you'd like to plug, Solana?
No, that's all of it. Please watch, and we love to hear what people think, so let us know.
And we'll link it to our Facebook page. It's already up there, Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Thanks, Solana. Have a great day. We'll take a quick break and then find out what's in the news with Steve. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Steve, thanks very much. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. We're at 312-981-7200. Don't forget, later on in the second half, at 2:05 because of our love for all things Gene Wilder and because we miss him tremendously. Denise Nickerson, who played Violet Beauregard in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, will be on with us at 2:05. I can't wait.
Well, of course, because that movie was based loosely on your life. It not is. Even that loosely.
Not loosely at all. They just followed me around with a camera and an Oompa Loompa. Luke is in studio. Our favorite Oompa Loompa, Dane Neal, joins us right now from Excess Appetite. Hello, Dane.
Yes, Oompa Loompa. So we start with the, but you know, there was, I think, a food element in the Oompa. Didn't she turn into a blueberry or something
she
like
sure
that?
She sure did.
Yep. Yeah.
A cautionary tale.
And there you have it, right? It's all about education,
I
knowing
love
what
blueberries.
To do.
If you turned into a blueberry, would you eat yourself then?
Oh, that's the age-old
something
question.
Something to ponder.
Yes.
Well, you think you have a couple arms, a couple legs you could do, and you see people working and adjusting well with just one of any one of those things.
Right.
You'd have to sample a little bit maybe in hard times.
So true, Dane. So true.
Dane Neal's segment today, sponsored by Resurrection University, by the way.
Dane, you have brought, as you frequently do, you have brought a guest with you. Please explain. Explain yourself. You just can't bring strangers in the studio. It's not safe.
Well, here's the thing. Oftentimes, we'll share great and amazing food that happens in Chicago or amazing events or worthwhile causes and all of those things. And this particular one is one that's kind of near and dear to me and also is really one of the most unique and kind of exciting takes on the whole chef community and kind of blending it into either the fundraising or the community support side of things. So the organization itself is called Pilot Light. Paul Kahn, Jason Hamill, Matthias Mergis, Ryan Pulley, those guys got together as chefs. And as we know and as we talk about on a regular basis, you know, the community here on the chef side is really supportive. So they're always doing fundraisers or events or helping great causes and a lot of times schools and kids. The difference with this one is it actually takes the chef and puts them in the classroom, kind of in that same, kind of the same vein as, you know, you have the fireman in or you have the police officer in. And Wendy's always talking, and I agree. And we all know that chefs are kind of the new rock stars, right?
Sure.
But you can't have, like, bring your rock star to school day, right? There just aren't maybe that.
That would be a well-attended day, by the way.
Yeah, no kidding.
And as big a stars as some chefs are, they are still kind of, in any community, they're kind of that everyday person that you could run into, bump into, see on a regular basis and kind of experience them. And it's probably better, in general, to experience the you know your chef rather than your local fireman or your local police, in most contexts, right?
Sometimes, yeah.
So these chefs got together and they created a program and a curriculum to actually get into the classroom, but then not only just, like, teach kids to cook, which you see people do, or even just kind of meet and greet. They're actually building into the curriculum, taking the food side, weaving it into the math, the science, the other courses, working with the teachers to create curriculum.
Yeah. That's how you learn when it's something fun like that.
It's exciting stuff. Plus being there as like, hey, this they've got this platform with kind of just the general celebrity of being, whether you're a celebrity chef or not, just being a chef. In studio, we have executive director Alex DeSorbo Quinn, and she has been involved for a few years now and is kind of bringing the program from just, you know, an idea to where it's doing some great things around Chicago.
Hi, Alex. Thanks for being here. Hi, really hi. Appreciate it. What is Dane leaving anything out? He usually does a pretty good job of explaining.
Yeah, he's doing a great job.
Yeah, nailed it. Well done, Dane.
Well, no, but talk a little bit about how it works, because that's the cool thing. It's one thing to have somebody come into the classroom, hey, look, everybody, it's so-and-so, but it's, I mean, it's an undertaking to kind of build some real education into those visits.
Yeah, like Dane was saying, it's more than just having these special events where a chef comes in and is cooking for the students. Pilot Light's really about building food education, so teaching kids where their food's coming from, how it gets to their table, and the impact that it's having on their lives and their communities, and weaving it into that existing curriculum. And what we've learned over time is that the way to do that is really to develop these deep partnerships with teachers, because teachers know their students, they know what they're learning at any given time, they know what their goals are for their students, they know about the communities that their students are living in. And here in Chicago, we have such different communities,
yes,
especially with food. We partner with them. We have chefs working with them. And the teachers bring food education into their classroom by teaching what they'd already be teaching the students. So maybe it's a lesson on poetry, and they're teaching it through food. And the great thing is that students are learning about food and its relevance to their lives. But at the
same
time,
pizza. I would make a pizza poem.
We've had some of those.
But isn't this important, too, for kids to realize have an appreciation for food, so maybe they'll eat healthier?
Yeah, exactly. But at the same time, for the teachers, putting food in front of kids and bringing it into the classroom, the kids are going to pay attention.
Big time.
I pay attention.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So how much of the goal is to say to kids, here's a career option. I'm sure you've already thought about it. But look, here's an actual chef to show you what a great job this is. And how much of it is other than that?
That's definitely one of the things we've seen. We've seen kids coming out of Pilot Light. Maybe they've never seen a chef before. They definitely have questions for the chefs. I think when they hear how many hours the chefs work each day, they're a little scared off sometimes. That's definitely one of the goals. But at the same time, getting them to come away and really think about the food on their plates and wherever they are, kind of ask questions. Maybe they're at a 7-Eleven or they're in the lunchroom or at home, and really say, you know, what questions should I be asking about this food, and giving them the confidence to ask those questions.
And what grades are we talking here? Is this high school, junior high, elementary, or all?
Well, we've worked over the years with K-12, but we're really focused on grades 3-5 because that age is kind of it's kind of a sweet spot for this type of education, because the kids are smart enough to know what you're teaching them, but at the same time, they're not too cool for school, so they'll pay attention.
They're still kind of sweet at that point. After third grade, forget it.
Then it stops.
Yeah. Sure. But we're going to expand more to the upper grades.
Oh, good. Years.
And I think the food is kind of just the platform or the context that you're speaking within. And I think maybe the career as a chef is just something saying like, hey, you know, this guy's having an impact. You know, he seems like an important person. You know, maybe I should look into that. But it seems like those are almost kind of side effects, because they're learning about poetry.
Right.
You know, it's just you're building food, you know, I think a language that's one of those universal ones.
Oh, yeah.
Into the education, making it kind of a vehicle for the information.
Yeah.
That they're sharing. I've interviewed, you know, Paul Kahn out at Aspen about this, and I've talked with Matthias, and we talked with Jason. It's one thing for chefs to get in there and maybe do a fundraiser or support a cause or help schools. This seems hard. Like, as you work with these guys all the time, like, what was that thought process on, like, here's what we want to accomplish? As difficult as may be, this is kind of what we feel would be the best use of what we're doing.
Yeah, it is hard, and we've definitely learned a lot over the years. Initially, the program was at one school for 4 years, and we had chefs in every classroom developing curriculum that paired with the lunch that the students were eating in the cafeteria that day.
And
teaching things like math and science.
Exactly, and it was brilliant, but at a certain point we said, you know, we want this to be in every school. How do we scale this model? And realized we had to make some changes, and we've done some iterations along the way, but what we've come away with is that you can't take curriculum and drop it into a classroom. You can't send a chef into a classroom to teach math or science or social studies if there isn't sort of this deep partnership, like I was saying before, with the teachers, and having the teachers engaged in that process and really having them lead that charge around what their students need to be learning at any given time, so that it's connected to everything they're doing.
The good news is, too, is kids can learn how to help with dinner. And honestly, I think that my boys have asked, how you could teach me your meatball recipe. It's something that the family can do together, or, you know, maybe mom or dad is working late and they can help make dinner.
Yeah, it's when kids learn about food, and maybe it's learning about, you were just talking about a meatball recipe, maybe it's learning about different family recipes and their cultural traditions or something. It makes kids go home and say, you know, I want to be involved in this process. And
King so-and-so
we've heard from the parents over and over again.
Loved meatballs or something. Happening. Who knows?
That's true. That's true. Dane Neal, you just heard.
Who was Alex the meatball king?
Was the meatball king?
See, I want to go home and look it up.
We'll find out. Alex DeSorbo Quinn is here. Dane Neal is here. And we're going to talk more about this. If you'd like to jump in, 312-981-7200 gets that done. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leffin, it's Wendy Snyder, along with Dane Neal from Access Appetite and from The Dane Neal Show, and Alex DeSorbo Quinn. We're talking about the Pilot Light program. Is this program unique to Chicago, or is this happening in other cities as well?
It's unique to Chicago for now, but we have plans in the future to expand.
What I love about it is, and there are so many great causes, worthwhile causes that do so many good works, and you'll preface it with that, but this is the kind of thing, you have communities, you have schools all across the country, and you have, you know, chefs working all across the country to whatever level, you know, depending on the community. But as a template, like this program of kind of weaving in, you know, taking, this is kind of harnessing that newfound kind of place in the community and level of celebrity that even chefs that aren't famous. Alex was telling me, you know, you have people like Paul Kahn, who's a famous chef, and or Matthias Murgeson, where they could charge thousands of dollars at a fundraiser for a package to cook. And these kids don't even know. They have no idea who they are. They're just excited that they're chefs.
Oh, sure.
It's like your local, you know, the fireman comes in and he's just,
yeah,
he's a regular, ordinary, awesome fireman, yeah, right? But, you know, they're celebrities in the community. That's the kind of thing that you could take and put anywhere and really kind of put those chefs to work on the support side in ways that I think they could pay a big dividend.
If schools are listening, actually people are back to school, but maybe they're listening to the podcast at WGNradio.com. How can people try and get their school to participate? I know you're filled for this year.
Yep. But we are in February 2017, we'll reopen applications, and teachers and schools can apply. It's a pretty rigorous process. We really want our teachers to be invested in the Pilot Light program and in bringing food education into their classrooms. But all the information is on our website and
PilotLightChefs.org.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Dane, there's a big event coming up that ties in.
Yeah, it's always good, no matter what good cause you have, to have decent support for it. And if you could build in a little bit of fun, maybe some awesome food, maybe Tom Colicchio from Top Chef, you know, you've got yourself a winner. So, Alex, talk a little bit about the Feed Your Mind event. You guys have been doing it for a number of years. This one is going to be the biggest and the best, mm-hmm. and there's still ways for people to get involved, participate, support, and enjoy.
Yeah, it's like Dane said, it's called Feed Your Mind, and it's at Morgan Manufacturing on October 7th.
That's a great place.
Friday.
That is a great place.
It's huge, and we're planning on having at least 700 people coming. So it'll be a lot of fun. We've got about 20 chefs from throughout the city who will bring tastings, and we'll have mixologists and great cocktails. And we have our special guest this year, who is Tom Colicchio, and he's a host of Top Chef, but he's also the founder of a nonprofit called Food Policy Action. So the work that he's doing in the nonprofit world to serve his community is very much aligned with Pilot Light.
Tom Colicchio, interviewed him a number of times, known him for a number of years. This is like, if you can have him involved with your event, like, he doesn't get involved with things that he doesn't also believe in and think are good. He's done so much work on the, you know, in Washington, speaking before Congress for the whole school lunch thing and nutrition and all that kind of stuff. So he really walks the walk, and it's cool to have him there. I'm not sure what he'll do, because he just seems on the show, in person, he's relatively less crabby.
Oh, but, good.
But on the show, relatively he's always so like stern. What do you have him doing at the event?
Well, he'll just be there shaking hands and saying a few words.
Rethink that. That Alex might not be good.
He'll be glaring, but in his signature way.
Right. That's good. I already know the answer to this, Alex, because I asked you off the air. But I said, long term, where is this Pilot Light program going? And you gave me something that's a year or so down the line, but it's very exciting.
Right, right. We're in the process of establishing a learning center for food education, and it will be this space where kids and teachers and chefs can come together and collaborate around teaching kids about food. And it'll be here in Chicago, of course. And they'll be...
Unless the Friends of the Park don't want it here.
Oh.
Remember what happened
don't
with the
Losers. Don't get me started.
she actually looked a little bit concerned.
Don't worry, they'll love it.
No,
they'll love it.
But yeah, we're really excited about it. We really believe that we need this brick and mortar space to do the work we're doing, and like Dane was saying, to scale it beyond Chicago, just having this hub of it here and bringing people in and taking what they learn, sort of the trainer type thing, and taking what they learn back to their own communities.
And it's in the future, but it's not way, way far off into the future.
No, summer 2017. So
that's great.
It's coming up.
Awesome.
Good. That's very, very good.
So PilotLightChefs.org for people to get, obviously schools, you know, to get more information on how they can participate next year, but also for everyone else to see how they can either go to the events or participate or find out what's going on, right?
Yep. And we're also on social media. We're on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter, so you can also follow us there, all at Pilot Light Chefs.
Good. What a great thing you guys have going. Congratulations
great work
you're doing.
For all this. Thanks.
Wonderful.
For having me.
Dane, thank you.
Thank you.
Great to see. No, thank you.
No, thank you.
Cut it out. Thanks, guys.
And thanks to Wendy too.
Well, and Wendy.
Yeah, thank me.
Wendy, you get some thanks.
Thanks.
We'll take a quick break, and then Kim Gordon has the news and more. Stick around, Bill and Wendy, WGN. I have an incredible story for everybody, and then a tie-in, because I know somebody who this happened to. Even though
a
it's one of those
a
things
of a friend.
It's my sister-in-law's friend. It's my wife's youngest sister's friend. had this happen to her, and I'll tell you what it is. And I know that it sounds impossible, and you're a woman, so it would, if I was a woman and I heard this, I'd go, trust me, Bill, you have no idea. You don't know. This is impossible. A woman in Iowa has just given birth to a baby, and she went in to the hospital just thinking she had stomach cramps. She had no idea she was pregnant at all. Just went in saying, hey, I got a stomach ache. I don't feel good.
The good news is I can tell you what's wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You're having a baby.
You're having a baby. What a lovely way of saying how much she loves you.
I don't believe the story for a second.
This is a true story, Wendy. You have to believe it because it's true. It was on the internet. On Friday, just this past Friday, August 26th, Stephanie Hughes went to the hospital with some bleeding and some excruciating cramps. She says, she told Us Weekly, I thought I was just having a bad period, but then less than 3 hours later, she, Stephanie Hughes, welcomed a 6-pound, 13-ounce baby girl named Ames Unity Hughes by way of a C-section at Unity Point Health Trinity Religion Medical Center.
God, that's a long name.
She had the baby while she was saying, where am I? And they told her the name of the hospital, and then by the end of the title, she had a baby.
Can I just commend you?
Yeah, because?
Because you're a guy who read Having Her Period and didn't wince or make funny faces. You just said it like normal.
I was
good
acting.
Good for you.
I was acting.
Great act.
I never had any cravings, said Stephanie. I never got sick. I was still wearing my regular clothes.
I hate her for that.
I had no signs of pregnancy. Zero. The Iowa-based office worker, that's Stephanie Hughes who we're talking about, and her husband of 12 years, Christian Hughes, are also parents of a son, Carmelo, who's 11.
Who they didn't know they were having either.
They didn't know about him. They just found out about him on Friday.
And how old is he?
Who's this kid living in our house for 11 years? That is also your son. Christian has two children from a previous marriage. Derek,
she is fertile Myrtle.
Yeah. Yep. Derek, 29, and 33-year-old Leslie Hughes, who was on Sean Lowe's season 17 of The Bachelor. Wait, I don't know who that is. I know who The Bachelor is, but I don't know who's the 30.
Is that who she was married to at one point?
I guess.
She's got a lot of background that I can't follow. There's too much stuff.
There is a lot of stuff in her life. Leslie was here just 2 weeks before I gave birth, and she thought that I looked like I had lost some weight, said the mom, Stephanie. My mom just thought I had gained some weight in my hips. Stephanie knows that she will face public backlash for not realizing that she was carrying a baby full term, but she believes that this could happen to anyone. Now, I don't believe that part. I don't think this could happen to anyone.
I knew I was pregnant. You gain a lot of weight. If you're very thin to begin with, which I wasn't,
yeah,
I would think you'd notice more.
All right. Here's the story of my sister-in-law's friend. She was in college. She was living at home with her parents. Her parents went away on vacation for a week. And when they came back from their vacation, their daughter, college age, had a baby. And they said, that baby is adorable. Whose baby is that? And she said, this is my baby. And they all had a good hearty chuckle. You know how you laugh when you think,
that is so
that
funny.
Cannot happen. And then she explained that while they were gone, she, much like this girl, Stephanie Hughes, was having stomach ache. And she went into the doctor and said, I don't know what's going on, but this part of my stomach is tender and it hurt. And he goes, well, what's going on here is you're about to have a baby. She only gained a couple of pounds.
First of all, it's good to know when you're pregnant because, you know, you should do the prenatal vitamins. You should eat better. You should not drink, not smoke. So it's
not
nice to
wrestle.
That's good until I think the 6 month.
That's where they say you should stop wrestling.
But
the last trimester, no wrestling.
You know, usually your period is late, so that tips you off a little bit.
But
your breasts get tender.
Don't mine? But don't some women have irregular periods?
Yes.
Where it's not always every month. It could be
right. You can be off. Sometimes you can skip a month, but that usually is when you would take a pregnancy test.
Right. Right.
I don't know. Rick is corroborating this. You know someone that this happened to, too, Rick?
Yeah, you know, my sister-in-law had done a pregnancy test. She gained a few pounds. It was kind of not feeling so great. The pregnancy test came back negative. A week later, she went to the hospital with cramps and that. and my niece was born.
I'm just jealous, I think. I wish it was that easy.
Would you rather have not known you were pregnant through your pregnancy?
Well, no, because you want to take care of yourself. Rick, we got to let you go because your phone is on a loop here, and yeah, we're on WGN.
Right.
It would be nice to just have it happen, but you want to eat well and take care
of
yourself.
Of course.
And
be coddled to some extent and have people ask you questions like, are you pregnant?
And then try and touch your stomach when they don't even know you.
You want strangers on a subway to go and touch you and make giggling noises.
Are you insinuating that pregnant women look like the Pillsbury Doughboy?
No.
Can I also tell you something? As having two kids, I can tell you this right now.
What?
And you know this with your wife, Terry, who was pregnant.
Yep.
It's like you have a basketball under your skin.
Sure.
When you're ready to deliver, that thing, I mean, it would make the same sound if you, like, patted on a basketball and you did your stomach.
Right.
It's hard.
Right.
So it's not just like you've gained weight. This is...
But some women are just built differently.
But the actual... Your uterus grows.
Yes.
And it's firm to touch. It's
sure.
not just like boy, I got some strong, my core is really strong right now. The
sure.
bad news is it's sticking out instead of in.
Right.
It's really firm. So how can they not know?
I don't know. I can't answer any of those questions. I just know that from time to time, like with this woman, with Stephanie Hughes, she had no idea. She had zero idea she was pregnant at all.
Dave, this is how your son came into the world?
You got it. 100%.
I don't believe you.
He's a beautiful 18-year-old sitting next to me as I'm taking him over to his college courses.
So, Dave, what happened with your wife? Like, did she just go to the hospital like these other women? No?
No. No, she was one of those women, like you were talking about before, who didn't cycle. She was told that she would never be pregnant for her entire life.
Oh, no.
At the time, she was in her early 30s. And she was told she never, 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 ever. And they were trying to put her on medication that would get her to cycle. And she went to the gynecologist and complained about discomfort. He said, well, you know, this medication that I'm giving you can cause some rather drastic side effects. So we better make sure you don't have something growing in there, like a tumor or an abscess or something. Let's get you over for an ultrasound. She didn't see the screen while the ultrasound person was giving the test. I'm looking at a backbone. And I'm going, hello. She was 5.5 months pregnant, and she delivered 2 weeks shy. She was low in amniotic fluid.
Wow, that's early.
She was underweight. Yeah, she was. A wonderful son sitting next to me, and none to wear for. But it does happen. And it does happen.
So he was born extremely premature and probably
now he's going
way
to
underweight.
College.
He weighed 4 pounds, 8 ounces.
He did.
He weighed 4 pounds, 8 ounces. And I could take a ring on my finger and put it over his leg.
Yeah.
Without any qualms whatsoever.
Well, he's at college now, Dave, so that's wild.
Yeah.
All right, well, congrats.
Thank you.
All right.
I know these stories are hard to imagine because you've been through this twice, and you say, if you're a woman, you know it, but every once in a while there's a woman who just... She just doesn't know it.
But this is not every once in a while. This is, you know, Dave's child was born that way, a friend of a friend of a friend of a friend. This woman in Iowa. Marianne, you're a registered nurse. This can happen?
Yeah, it happens a lot. And the two stories I was telling the producer.
Kevin,
yes. When I was just in nursing school, I had a woman who... This was her fourth pregnancy. Remember the sheath dress of the 60s?
Yeah.
She walked in a sheath dress. This is her fourth baby. And she had to tell me when she was having her contractions because she was playing cards. And, I mean, it was as if it never faced her. I couldn't even believe this woman was pregnant, delivered a very healthy 7.5-pound baby.
But you couldn't tell by appearance that she was pregnant.
She walked in. She didn't even have a pooch. Nothing.
No, she had a baby.
No dogs allowed in the hospital. You know that. Very strict rules in the hospital when it comes to pets.
That's right.
Right. So with her other children, could she, like you said, she had three prior to that baby. Was it more visible with the others?
I didn't ask her that. Mm. I just was like, you know, 18, 19 years old, I was just, you know, you've always seen women that were so obviously pregnant.
Yeah.
So it was almost like you were looking at, you know, it just was hard to believe. And then many years later, I worked in a clinic, local health department, and we had a woman walk in, and again, she claimed she had had net negative pregnancy tests, had bled every single month, and delivers full term 9 months and a normal size baby. She came to the clinic because she didn't feel right.
That's
we
amazing.
Sent her to the hospital.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. That blows my mind. I believe you, Marianne. It just really, it's, no, how it's could you crazy. Not know?
Well, there's lots of denial is a wonderful, you know,
that plays. Does that play into it a little bit? Is a woman saying who's on the borderline of, oh, something's going on with my stomach? Does she know and she's just denying it?
Well, maybe she's not married. Maybe she's not in love with the person. Maybe she doesn't know who the person is. Maybe there's been several.
Oh, you paint some pretty pictures.
And I do think if you are told, much like that previous caller, if you're told that you could never be pregnant,
In
my case, as the ladies had children. Both of those ladies had had children.
Well, then I believe
they
knew.
That was even more amazing to me, because I thought, once you've been pregnant, how would you, you know, she knew she was pregnant. She walked in appropriately. She was in, you know, really, she wasn't denying any pregnancy. I just meant that she was so slim. She was slimmer than me.
So you couldn't even tell.
It was like, I cannot believe the child had to be standing like straight up and down. It was the craziest thing. And then on the second case, because she had had a bleed at each time, which women can do, it may not be right, but you could, you know, if you're older, you think you're going through menopause. So there's tons of stories of women that have the menopausal baby, because they're convinced they're going into menopause.
I hope I'm in menopause or else I'm having another one.
Well, it's a very common scenario.
Sure.
Life is changing. Obviously, what women forget is you do ovulate before you get your period. So, you know, again, if you have unprotected intercourse, you know, you're going to get pregnant. And when a woman starts thinking she's old and cannot have children,
that's when your guard is down and your pants.
Marianne, we got to let you go. Bill's working blue here. Thank you. You even astounded yourself on that.
I would not have said that on the radio if I had thought about it. I'm embarrassed.
Take a break. All right. And we have an OBGYN, a labor and delivery nurse. We have to talk to her because this is crazy. This is crazy, as Tracy Morgan would say.
All right, a break and then more of this. It's 312-981-7200 if you want to join in, Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Bill's not behaving today.
I'm not behaving. How about this woman, Stephanie Hughes? Stephanie, just this past Friday, went to the hospital. I'd tell you the name of the hospital, but we'd be out of show. It's a hospital in Iowa, Fort Dodge, Iowa. She thought she was having stomach cramps. Nope, she was having a baby. She had no idea she was pregnant, but this happens more frequently than you'd want to think.
Well, a baby is better than stomach cramps.
It is way better.
Kelly, you are a labor and delivery nurse. This isn't true.
Yeah. I don't buy it.
No?
I don't either.
So I've been a labor and delivery nurse for more than 20 years.
Yeah.
And in my career, I legitimately think I've seen one person come in who was able to truly hide a pregnancy. It was this was years ago. And the thing is, things have changed so much in just the time of my career. Nobody cares anymore. Nobody bothers to hide it. Nobody cares who the baby daddy is. You know what I mean?
Sure.
It's not even worth it anymore. But back, you know, in the mid-90s, I think this was a high school girl, and she stayed home from school with a stomach ache, and her mom took her to the pediatrician because she was so much agony. The pediatrician thought she had appendicitis. She was listening to her belly for bowel sounds, and he heard another heartbeat. And the girl knew. She had been putting a lot of effort into hiding the pregnancy, but the parents didn't know. But the girl had run in the state track meet 2 weeks before.
Wow.
Oh, my God.
The 100 high hurdles. and had placed. I know. How about that?
She came in third and a half.
But other than that, I just really don't. I don't know.
Listen, Kelly, your body changes so much. Your areolas become the size of paper plates.
Thank you.
They get darker, and that's so the baby can see them when you're nursing.
Sure.
You get your hair changes. You feel different. I never had any morning sickness, but you feel different.
Yeah.
I mean, take all of that out and think about a 7.5-pound human being for the last couple of weeks, twisting and turning and rocking and rolling in there.
Yeah, how do these people not feel the baby moving?
That's the part I found most curious. I remember through my wife's last month and a half or 2 months, there was never a time where there wasn't kicking or pushing or shoving.
It looked like a waterbed at times because it was like moving in and out.
Yeah.
Right. Sometimes, you have your morbidly obese population, and I think they often, can walk around without it being very obvious that they're pregnant. And then, you do have very thin women who have very strong abdominal muscles. But as far as, I didn't know I was pregnant, I always think that that's like an underlying.
You don't believe it at all.
Yeah, like they're hiding something.
But this woman had nothing to hide. Like, she already, she's married.
Oh, she was?
She's married. She already had three kids. The Stephanie Hughes lady in Iowa.
So then there's that. So she was already married. She had three kids. From the way you described it, her husband had two kids from a previous relationship that were grown. It sounds like one of them.
And somebody from
The
Bachelor's involved in this story, which I still don't know how.
I don't understand that either.
Well, let me tell you something. When there's somebody involved that's got a reality TV, some Iowa person that wants a reality TV fame, that right there, it should be your first.
You think it's to get attention.
This is all made up.
We're talking about it, aren't we?
Oh, yeah, I guess.
This is totally a grab for attention. She's probably, 38 or whatever, really didn't want another child, and has two grown stepchildren who the one gets attention and is on TV. Hey, here's an idea. Maybe she'll get picked up by The Bachelor again and get some notoriety because I didn't know I was pregnant. Come on.
Interesting.
All right. Well, Kelly, thank you. Are you still a labor and delivery nurse? Because it's hump day today, and maybe you'll get some business after today.
You know what? I am. We've had a crazy, crazy, crazy month this month, and so we're hoping to finish.
Why is that? What happened? Is this after the what was 9 months ago that made people?
I wonder. Did something happen?
I don't know. I don't know. I think our volume is just up. We're lucky.
How do you do it?
Security.
Volume.
That's a great job.
All right. Well, have fun, Kelly.
Thanks, Kelly.
Thanks so much.
But it does. I mean, you have to admit, from time to time, even though the numbers are low, it does happen. I mean, my sister-in-law's friend is a good example. Other people who called in with their own stories.
I don't believe
you
them.
Don't believe any of them.
I don't believe anyone.
All right.
Whose birthday is it?
Art's.
Happy birthday, Art.
Actually, they missed it. It's late. But it was a belated
last week.
Birthday.
He tried to keep it under the radar.
IT guy. Yeah, he does all of our computer
work. He's the IT guy, so he erased all of his records. We didn't know it.
We'll talk to Steve Bertrand next. Find out what's coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
We are not so young Americans.
Yeah, that's kind of true. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill F. It's Wendy Snyder. We would love to hear from you at any point during the show at 312-981-7200. Just a couple of highlights or what we hope to be highlights of the next couple hours. Denise Nickerson is a name you may not recognize right off the bat, but what if I were to tell you that Denise Nickerson played the role of Violet Beauregard in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory?
I'd say I'd be dying to talk to her.
Yeah, she'll be on to tell stories about our friend Gene Wilder, who passed away a couple of days ago, and help us get through that trauma. And then, as my wife told me today, because I was very excited that we were having one of the kids on, she said, oh, good, have her on, and then move on with your life, she explained to me.
I don't think that's nice at all.
That is insensitive.
And this coming from a woman who, in the wedding vows you gave to her, laid down a quote from Willy Wonka.
I did, yeah. And
doesn't she know how much that means to you?
Yeah, I'm shocked at her behavior, Wendy. I'm shocked. And then Brian Noonan will also be on.
Can we talk Willy Wonka with him?
Yeah, we'll discuss we'll discuss Gene Wilder's career with Brian Noonan. Brian, I'm so proud of him. You know, I've known Brian Noonan for almost 30 years. Back when I did stand-up, frequently I would have Brian come along as my opening act because I always enjoyed Brian Noonan very much.
You guys go back that far?
Yeah, almost 30 years.
It's amazing.
I was trying to think of exactly what year I met him. But
where did you meet him? On the stage somewhere?
In comedy clubs somewhere. And I always liked him. And then we both went into radio. And now Brian just got a job in a professional stage show. He's going to be in Tony and Tina's Wedding. So he'll be on to talk about
which
that.
Which I love, by the way.
It's a good show.
I saw it when it first came to town, and I would be willing to go back, and I may, to go see Brian Noonan.
To see Brian, it's well worth it. I always think, and I know that this is a discredit to the people who write plays, but I like the element of a show being different every night. One of the things that prevented me from being in plays was I didn't like the fact that it was the same exact thing every night. You know, I did plays in college, and it kind of, I hate to say this, but after a while, after you did three or four or five nights of the same play, you were bored with it. It's like, oh, I got to say the same thing at the same time.
Yeah, I often wondered about that because after seeing SpongeBob the Musical,
yeah,
the guy who played SpongeBob was outstanding.
You had him on, didn't
yes,
you?
Yes, with Dean. You were on vacation.
I was away.
And he was so good. Everybody was so good in that play. It was really enjoyable.
Right.
More so that I'm a SpongeBob fan. But I was thinking about that because my son Michael may look into theater in college. And does it get boring when you do the same thing every night? Or do you try and outdo your last show because you're only as good as your last show?
I've heard a myriad of different answers from actors and actresses over the years. But I always wonder, like, how would a show do? How would Death of a Salesman be if they said, okay, here's the concept. You're a salesman and you have been for years and years, and here's your family. Run with it. See where it goes. See what direction it goes tonight.
It might be great.
Some nights it would be
great.
It might
suck.
Yeah, other nights it would not be as great. So Tony and Tina's Wedding is one of those plays where it is. It's a different performance every night. I'm trying to think of what was the show that ran here in town for years and years and years that was about... It was about a murderer and a barber shop. I'm blanking on the name of it, but I saw that play.
A murder and a barber
shop. Yeah, there were
barber shop.
No, it's not called barber shop. There were Sheer Madness.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
Sheer Madness. That's it, right? So in Sheer Madness, all you knew was somebody's going to get murdered, and all the potential murderer people who could have been the murderers were at this beauty salon.
Spoiler alert!
Run
I never went.
But it was different. But the thing that was so cool, and I think the thing that made it run forever here, was that it was different every night. I mean, it could have only been one of the five characters who have been the murderer, but still, the interaction was different every night.
I love Tony and Tina's Wedding for that reason. First of all, I'm half Italian. I've been to Italian weddings, so I could relate to that. Plus, it's family-style food, so it's kind of great.
Oh, yeah.
And you can, there are certain guest appearances by some audience members sometimes.
Sure.
It is really fun.
And for some reason, doesn't Frankie Avalon show up a lot? Am I imagining that? Wasn't there a time where if anyone was doing a production of Tony and Tina's Wedding,
right,
Frankie Avalon came in and played a cameo, I think? I don't know if that's still the case. I just seem to remember every once in a while.
I think you're right.
Is that Frankie Avalon in town? What's he doing here? And he was in Tony and Tina's Wedding, I think.
How fun would that be to just come in
with
and
him?
Blow through and do a little guest shot?
Yeah, that'd be all right.
Is he the same every time?
No. No, Frankie Avalon's always different. You never get the same Frankie Avalon two nights in a row. All right, so yeah, those are two of the guests. We've got Brian Noonan coming on with other cast members of Tony and Tina's Wedding at 1:35, and then Denise Nickerson, who played Violet Beauregard in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, will be on at 2:05, and there will be a lot of gushing.
I know, and you know, you might want to tell your wife that, you know, if we can get Charlie from Willy Wonka.
Peter Ostrom? Yeah, that would
be
all
right,
too.
We're not going to let this die.
Right.
So I know Gene Wilder has passed away.
I know.
But we're, I mean...
I get that it's partially selfish, but he...
You're not the only one that was upset when he passed away for that reason. But you're... To me, it meant the most to you, but everybody else is relating to this.
I can't tell you how many things I've seen on the internet. We got word of his death on Monday, and for the last 48 hours or so, every time I go on the internet, it's somebody else of some importance commenting on his death and just saying... This was a guy that when I was a kid, I watched him and I said to myself, I think I'm going to go into show business because of Gene Wilder. The accolades have just piled up and piled up and piled up, and rightfully so. I mean, he really was such an unforgettable guy. And I said to you the other day, I know one of the movie channels, it's either going to be AMC or Turner Classics, somebody's going to do a Gene Wilder retrospect at some point soon, right? They've got to put 8 or 10 of his movies on through a weekend. I would imagine that's going to happen in the next week or two. How could they not?
You mentioned, was it the Frisco Kid?
Yeah.
And someone had put something that night that it's on whatever channel. I can't remember.
I think that was on TMC the other night, Turner Movie Classics.
So was there already
I think that was already in play. No, I don't think they had planned a marathon. I think it was just a fluke thing that that movie was scheduled for the night that we found out about his dying. I think.
We'll try and find out because they have to be doing it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And everybody's posting like their favorite Gene Wilder movies.
I know. I know.
And you know what? This weekend, the kids, they've already seen Willy Wonka, but they haven't seen Young Frankenstein or Blazing Saddles. So that might be what we're doing this weekend.
Those are just so funny. And, you know, people have said this in the past. I'm by far not the first person to say this. I don't think Blazing Saddles could be made today because it's so politically incorrect.
I've warned my sons.
There's so much dialogue and there's so much subject matter in Blazing Saddles that if somebody presented that today in a script, somebody would say immediately, yeah, I can't let that part of this movie happen.
No, the only person that would be for it would be Archie Bunker.
Even he,
I don't know.
At some point. And Young Frankenstein on the other side is just, it's a perfect pair. I mean, it really is.
Funny.
It's perfect.
And you forget, I mean, some of these movies I haven't seen in a long time.
Yeah.
And just seeing the clips of Young Frankenstein, it's so funny.
Yes, it is, start to finish.
Cloris Leachman had some great things to say about
Gene
Wilder.
I didn't see it.
Really?
I gotta find
you
it.
Searching the internet from the moment we left
I
here?
I read, in the last couple days, I've read so many things about him, but I didn't see that, but I'll look for it.
All right, we have an update to your marathon, and thank God for the listeners doing our work. Susan, when is it happening?
I think it's September 29th. I mean, I left it on my computer at home, but I think it's September 29th. It's either on AMC or TMC.
Yeah.
Because Frisco Kid is my favorite Gene Wilder movie.
It's really good, isn't it?
It's so good. It's so good. And it's on at 2:15 a.m. And I don't have a DVR. I think I have to go get one just so I can have it.
You have time. You better get one, Susan. Okay. They're pretty cheap now.
Yeah, I suppose so.
Nick DiGilio confirmed it. It is September 29th on TMC,
That's Turner Movie Classics.
Okay.
That would make sense.
There you go.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Susan.
Dave Plyer has let me know that Friday and Saturday at the McHenry Outdoor Drive-In, Young Frankenstein and Blazing Saddles
Wouldn't that be great to see in a drive-in double feature? Wow. That would be great.
Where is this drive-in? There's still a drive-in?
McHenry. There's McHenry still a few. Outdoor Drive-In.
Seriously?
Yeah. There's one out in St. Charles, too.
Hmm.
A pretty good one. All right. We need to take a break. We have a lot more to discuss with you. If you want to jump in, we'd love to hear from you. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff, and it's Wendy Snyder on WGN.
There are people still grieving, Bill.
I hope so. I hope it's not just me.
No. Somebody sent a funny little comic strip, and it's a picture of the Oompa Loompas carrying a casket.
Serving as pallbearers?
Yes.
Yeah.
A purple casket with a hat on top of
it. Oh, yeah. With his chocolate-covered hat, top hat. Yep. And they're weeping as well they should be.
And there's a former Oompa Loompa who's still around and has weighed in.
Rusty Goff is the actor's name.
Of course you would know that.
I do. Rusty Goff, he was in movies before Willy Wonka, I think.
He was 22 when the movie was filmed.
Was he? Yeah, he's one of the Oompa Loompa. But then he's gone on to be in like all the Harry Potter movies and stuff. He works pretty regularly.
Well, he has a lovely tribute. There are still tributes coming in. So
yeah,
really,
it's not just me.
We want to help you grieve, and in different time frames, and this one's going to take you a while.
I said the other day, there's a list of people, and I don't want to go into the whole list, and I think it's probably the same list that most of you have. Dick Van Dyke is on that list for me. Don Rickles is on that list for me. It's just people that have entertained me immeasurably over the years. I can't even... I can't even count the hours that those guys have made me happy, and the thought of not having any of them on the planet anymore is just so upsetting to me.
You're not the only one, but you do take it harder with certain people.
I do.
And now the Gene Wilder movie marathon is on TCM. See, because TMC is the movie channel. Is that still a premium channel?
That's the movie channel. And then if you switch the letters around, you have Turner Movie Classics, TMC.
They're saying it's Turner Classic Movies.
Oh, did they reverse that?
I don't know, but it's happening on September 29th. That's all I know. September 29th. Turner Classic Movies, check your local listings.
Does it give the lineup of what's playing?
No, I can find out, though.
We can probably guess, can't we? I mean, it's going to be the Mel Brooks movies that he's most famous for. It's going to be Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Probably Silver Streak. Maybe Hanky Panky. Probably not
that.
Haunted Honeymoon. Sherlock Holmes Smarter Brother, probably.
Jeez.
The World's Greatest Lover, maybe.
Why don't they consult you?
They can consult me.
I can't.
I'll help them out with it.
Here, September 29th.
Quaxer Fortune has a cousin in the Bronx, maybe. See No Evil, probably not.
No, I'm not finding it.
No, they don't give the list?
No, and I'm on their website. TCM.
The Lady in Red, maybe.
I'll sing that too.
Or maybe they'll save that for the Kelly LeBrock Film Festival that they'll show.
They will that show.
I'm not sure they will.
Although, what was her other big role?
Weird Science.
Yes,
She was in Weird Science.
It is TCM. It's Turner Classic Movies.
Oh, it is. All right. All right.
So September 29th, check your local
I'll be listing. Watching. I'll be watching that. You know, Disney, the Disney company has had an interesting year.
They have.
You know, obviously, the worst thing ever at Disney World ever was that child who got eaten by an alligator.
He wasn't eaten. He was drowned.
Drowned by an alligator. That's beyond horrendous. But now, this is something, if you're Disney, you're trying your best to get business back on track and make everybody happy. It's the happiest place on earth, you know.
Yeah, allegedly.
Well, now a family, Joseph and Danielle Jones, are suing Disney and Disneyland.
What now?
Because they took their children there, and what they got was they stayed at one of the hotels at Disneyland that's kind of on the edge of Disneyland.
Is California?
Yeah. It's the Grand California Hotel and Spa. When I was there in December, Kylie was looking at colleges out in California, and we went to Disney for a couple days. We didn't stay there. We stayed across the street from there, but we walked through the lobby a couple times because it's kind of a shortcut to get into the park, and it's a beautiful hotel. It's really nice. And the views from some of the rooms, you look out, and you're looking right at Disneyland. It's right outside your window. Well, they went there with their family, and everybody got bed bugs. And because of the bed bugs, they are suing the Disney Corporation.
I would, too. And it happened. Remember, Chicago had a bed bug explosion?
We were the worst city in America for a while.
And some of the greatest hotels.
Right. Right.
But yeah, although what do you sue for?
That's what I'm trying to figure out. I mean,
Bactine for your month's supply of
your
Bactine
bites?
To stop the itching?
It says that they stayed at the Grand California Hotel and Spa in Anaheim, and it wasn't long before their 9-year-old daughter started complaining about itchy, painful bites on her face.
These were
the results of bed bugs. This was 2 years ago, by the way. The family is now suing Disney and seeking unspecified damages for alleged battery.
Oh, come on. What, they told the night clerk that they had bed bugs in the bed and the clerk punched them? What?
It doesn't say that, but possibly. For negligence, for fraudulent concealment, suggesting that the Disney company knew that there were bed bugs.
I'll bet you they didn't.
Maybe it was just Jiminy Cricket. For nuisance, which I've been sued for, for intentional and negligent infliction of emotional distress.
Okay, this is pushing it.
The complaint states that the hotel already had a history of guests reporting bed bug bites. My guess is almost every hotel has some sort of record of people complaining of that.
I bet not.
You don't think so?
Every hotel?
I would think almost every hotel. I would think. Bed bugs are a huge problem.
Have they been at your house?
No, we've never had them.
We haven't either, knock on wood. We had lice. We brought lice to Disney World.
I know. You remember you did.
And honestly, the nurse there at Disney World in Magic Kingdom I said, you know, something's going on with my son. We just arrived, and it's like, oh, yeah, he's got lice. What do we do? I was freaking out.
Yeah.
And she said, oh, you just, here's the place you call, and you call the pharmacy. They'll drop it off at your hotel. Just let them know. And I did. I called the front desk and said, just so you know, you might want to burn these sheets. But I didn't want them to not know.
Right, sure.
Is that what you told them, or you
that
said
seems
no?
Severe.
I didn't. But I
you're like, wow.
I might want to close this whole Disney World down if I were you.
That could be caused by any number of things.
This is my son Dylan's first trip to Disney, and unfortunately, he must have picked up lice at school, and they've come into action right now.
Oh, no.
And we've ordered the RID from the pharmacy for $900.
Yeah.
But they deliver.
Well,
and
it's a
bargain. I just wanted to let you know, so housekeeping may want to do something special with these sheets. And they honestly, it was
they, didn't even
they were
flinch.
Nonplussed.
Wow.
It's like this is not the first time it happened, yet I was disgusted and horrified.
It's Disney. They've seen everything over the years. They've had millions and millions of people go through there.
Disney on lice. That's what we called that trip.
Oh, it also says at the end of the story that this family is suing you, Wendy, for bringing lice to Disney.
That's bed bugs and lice are two different things. Put them in a duel. I don't know who's going to win.
That's a tough shot.
I'm going bed bug.
That
if
would
you
be
want
a tough
to know
one.
The truth.
All right, we'll take a quick break. Steve has the news and then a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
Ehi, hey, compare, ci può suonare, chi si sarà un friscaletto.
Wendy, translate this for me. You're part Italian. What does this mean?
He's whistling.
Is that right? Is that true? I didn't know that.
It's the only part I understand. I don't speak it.
But it's the language of love, is it not? We know that for a fact. The Italian language is the language of love. You know who's here to help us make sense of this is our friend Brian Noonan, who for many, many years has served as DJ extraordinaire here at WGN.
Sure.
And
DJ.
Now...
DJ, because I spin the stacks of wax at the back
the
of the racks.
He
you know that,
the
Wendy.
Hits that the kids like to hear. And then in addition to this, Brian is now a thespian, which is exciting
yes.
news.
Back to my first love, Bill. The I'm taking the boards again. Yep. I will be treading the boards in Tony and Tina's wedding. As Vinny Black, the Cadillac of caterers.
I'm so proud of you, by the
Thank
way.
Thank you. That's,
I really
that's
am.
That's wonderful of you to say. I appreciate that.
I am proud of you.
Tina's Wendy, here, so and she's rolling her eyes, as am I.
Tina from Tony
what?
And Tina's Wedding.
Can you believe these two? They got a love fest going on.
Do you want us to leave the room?
No, you're fine. You're fine.
Get a room.
Get a room, for heaven's sake.
Well, we're in a big glass-walled room. Maybe we like everybody to watch.
Oh, God.
Hannah Brown plays one of the leads, Tina Vitale, soon to be Tony and Tina of Vitale.
Vitale.
What is
Vitale.
It like Vitale. To work with this guy, Brian Noonan? Is it exciting?
Oh, my gosh. It's such a blessing from above.
Sure.
Yeah, I bring a little levity to every place I work. Ask everybody upstairs what a joy it is to work with me. They know.
They all know.
Everybody knows.
This show ran in Chicago for years and years and years and then went on hiatus and now it's back. Are you new to the show, Hannah? Have you ever played in the show before?
No, I'm new to it and I actually haven't seen it either.
Oh, you've never seen it?
I am a complete... Yeah, I'm super
Wait, Brian's
green.
Laughing at you. Brian, explain to Hannah how many times you have seen Tony
I have
Tina's
seen
wedding.
It a total of none.
Zero. Between the two.
But I watched
you
the
know, Bill, you and I could be Tony and Tina more so than these two.
Well, listen, so a lot of times you get cast in something you may have never seen. I've done research on the project. I understand. I've developed Vinny as Hannah has developed Tina.
We're right.
All, yes.
Right. So true.
We're all, you know, so we're actors, Wendy. I don't know if we're acting.
I have never acted, and I would imagine it would be really fun to be in. We were giving it a little rave up because I'm a big fan of Tony and Tina's Wedding. And
well,
it
we
is
hope
like
to
a,
see you.
I would like to go.
It
yeah,
opens September
come,
22nd.
Come to my wedding.
And it is like a wedding. There's a family-style pasta and yep. chicken
booze.
Kind of thing. Of course there's booze. It's an
you
Italian
know,
wedding.
I have to give my guests something, you know.
<That's> right. Yes, come enjoy Vinnie Black's Buffet of Love.
The
Colosseum.
Bow,
yeah. Oh, there's
morning,
also.
Brian.
Well, that's how Bill he creates dreams.
Yes,
he creates wonderful experiences for young brides like Tina
yes.
and their grooms.
Yep.
Are you nervous for your wedding? Have you planned?
Tina has been planning since she was four. She has a collage under her bed of dresses and things she wanted. Hannah, on the other hand, has not thought about marriage since I was maybe five. So it's fun to play someone who's really different
wow.
than me. Well, I always thought, like, I was talking about this with my friend recently, how, like, a lot of girls, when they're little, they want to, like, play house and play with baby dolls.
Yeah.
I, on the other hand, was just putting my Barbies in cute outfits and getting them in a car and making them drive around. And that's, like, how I try to live my life now. So you know.
Did you explain this to the producers when they were casting the role?
Sure didn't.
Good. I wouldn't have either. Good.
Put Avoid my best that foot forward.
At all costs.
It's going to be fun playing a bride without the pressure of planning a wedding.
Absolutely.
And you get to swear a lot in this show.
Oh, thank goodness.
A lot of profanity.
My poor grandma's listening right now. I'm like, sorry, grandma, I kind of have a mouth on me when you're not around.
So it'll fit right in.
Yeah, I do. You've heard it.
Yeah.
You know me. I'm a very shy man. That's old.
I know. It was shocking, I'm sure, for you.
It was.
You've done, although not professional theater, you have done plays in the past, right?
Sure, I've done plays in the past in high school and college, and then I've done other acting gigs on TV, like commercials and a couple mm-hmm. sitcom things, but I haven't, this is the first one, and the first role since the new Brian has emerged from his fat cocoon
the thinner,
and walks the earth.
More svelte Brian.
Sure, that's how I got it, because I look good in a cummerbund. Which one?
The Fat Cocoon.
The Fat Cocoon.
The Fat Cocoon.
Or the Svelte Brian.
Or the Svelte Brian, sure.
Also a good one. I don't know if you know, Hannah, Brian lost 160 pounds, Brian?
Yeah, yes. I just found that out. Mazel tov. That's amazing.
Isn't that great?
Yeah.
Yes, but listen.
You did it in 1 week.
I did it.
Bill, tell me your secret.
Not, I just purged.
People false hope.
I never binged. I just purged. One continuous purge for a week and a half. That'll do it.
So with the yes. losing of all that weight, just the simple act of moving about on stage is a different experience,
I'm hoping.
Isn't it?
I'll find out.
You'll know soon.
We'll know soon enough when you come see Tony and Tina's wedding.
Right.
I got to say, I got to plug the website or the producers.
Yeah,
get
please do.
It's TonyLovesTina.com. Mm-hmm. And you can use one of two codes. Because, Bill, you know I like to save people money. And, Wendy, you'll probably get in for nothing, so don't worry
All
about
right,
it.
All right, I love it.
But you can use Noonan10 or Hannah10, correct?
Yeah.
And you'll save $10 off a ticket.
Not bad.
Not bad at
Not
all.
Bad. Not bad. Now,
and this originated in New York?
Yes. It originated in New York, and then then they had the run here that, as Bill mentioned, it ran for 15 years at Piper's Alley.
I loved it. I saw it.
Did you?
Yeah.
Well, good. You'll like it better this time.
I want to go.
You're going to like the remount, because now, instead of it all being in one spot, the really cool part is the wedding is actually in a church.
Oh, I
oh,
love
it is?
Yes, yes, the wedding is at Resurrection Church on 3309 North Seminary. So you go, you park near the church, you go to church, and then you walk a block to Vinnie Black's Coliseum,
yeah.
which is at 1113 West Belmont
yeah.
in the Chicago Theater Works building, but it'll be Vinnie Black's Coliseum. And then
I
you come to the
this.
Reception. So
It's
really like going, yeah,
That's
it's
fantastic.
Like really going to a wedding.
Do people, or have they in the past, because it's so realistic, have people brought gifts? I don't know what the protocol is on
envelopes
gift.
Are preferred.
They do bring envelopes?
Fingers crossed.
Oh, wouldn't that
I
be
I also
nice?
Really want one of those spiralizers so I can make zucchini noodles. So anyone listening.
Are like, you registered somewhere, Hannah, for the play?
I should be,
you
honestly.
Should be registered.
I need some stuff.
Is
and,
that
you know.
When you put the screw in it and just kind of twist it around and it makes little spiral things?
Yeah,
that,
I think so.
You can make curly fries with that, too. You can put it in a potato.
Is that right?
That's yeah. what
Put
said.
Your screw in a potato and then just
right.
twist it around?
Come on. Are you just trying to give Nick DiGilio
more
information?
Come on.
Oh, my
Ooh,
God.
What?
He should go to Tony and Tina's wedding as a guest.
I hope so. Everybody is welcome. Everybody can go to TonyLovesTina.com and get their tickets.
When you audition for these parts in
yes.
Tony and Tina's wedding, and then when you get the parts, what do they say to you as guidelines? Do they let you make up some backstories on the characters? Or
yeah.
They do. All right. I like the sound of that.
Yeah. We had to figure out, we were given a list of questions, and we all sort of had to delve into who we were playing.
Yeah.
And mine ended up being a very long rant in Tina speak about how grateful I am that I have like more than one I in my name so I can dot all my I's with hearts.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, mine turned into a 7-page answering all these questions about Vinny and his background and his parents and his siblings.
And
as my daughter said,
this
is all actory stuff.
Yeah, it is. It's
which
very
actory. Yeah, I'm not a very, you know, well, my Daniel Day-Lewis, I'm going to sit around in a hat
for him, or do they sit across from you at a table?
Oh, no, at the audition, it was like for Vinny has, because Vinny is hosting the reception. It's
yeah,
in
right.
his place. So there were a couple little speeches. So I go in, I do my little speech, and then they said, all right, we want you to improvise. And so because this is comedy and improvisation, it was kind of right up my alley.
Yeah.
And so I improvised with a couple different people because I had originally auditioned for a different part. And they said, will you stick around and read for this other part? Okay. Sure. What am I going to do? No, I'm very busy.
Thanks for
you asked me in for one thing and now I must leave.
Right.
I pulled a whole big diva move. So it was the lines plus a lot of improv. And you had to do a lot of improv too.
Yeah. I mean, I originally went in for a different role as well. And I walked into the room as character or in character. I didn't like walk in as myself. So I was like, hi, hi. And like introduce myself. And then yeah, we did a bunch of guided improvisational scenes with like other characters in different circumstances. Yeah. And Tina actually like felt real good once I put her on.
Oh, nice. Yeah. That's nice. And do you have some improv background, Hannah?
Actually, the word improv really, really scares me.
Why?
Because it's interesting. As a human being, I am always going into characters and being kind of shticky.
Yeah.
But when it's like, okay, let's make up a scene now, I find it to be kind of overwhelming. But this show is great because you're given these sort of bold, larger-than-life characters.
Right.
And so in that way, you're kind of guided. And so the word improv isn't as scary.
Oh.
Well, and I know what you mean because, like, you can do it, but then when somebody points out that you're doing it, then all of a sudden it becomes a thing.
Yeah.
Like when you're a comedian and somebody says, say something funny.
Right.
It's the same kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. And
did you get involved when you were in the audience the last time, Wendy? Because a lot of people
was drunk and swore a lot.
So but you did get involved.
Oh my God, you were like
perfect.
A part of the family.
Yeah, you
were,
exactly. You fit in great.
Absolutely. Yeah. But they do sometimes, they brought somebody who, I don't know if he was a plant or not, but it seemed like a wedding guest. And occasionally, Bill, you mentioned Frankie Avalon. There are friends of the wedding party that, you know, if someone's in town.
Listen, if you guys are interested, we know some people. Mm-hmm. If you would like to be somebody's uncle or, you know, a distant cousin, perhaps we can work
this
that out.
This says celebrities are in the show.
As I said, I know people. I can grease them. I'll talk you up. I go, listen, nice they do. They have a following. They're pretty big. I don't know. We've never heard of them. Trust me. I think they'll be okay. I think they could come and pretend to be wedding guests.
Interesting.
Have them send a demo reel.
I'm trying to think of all the Italians in town that would be good in this. We could give you a list of names.
There might be somebody. We'll figure it out.
We'll find somebody. You guys are... You
know. I was saying to Wendy, there was a time where it seemed like Frankie Avalon kept coming to Chicago and he was in the play over a weekend, right?
What else did he have to do?
That.
I don't know. He's coming
local
to,
sports
are they
stars.
Use me?
There was a
Mark
world...
Mark Giangreco. That'd be the guy. I would think Mark Giangreco. They could find a place for him.
He could do it.
Wouldn't you think?
You don't have to be Italian.
No. I understand that because you're a guest at the wedding.
Right, you're a guest. Yeah. You could be whoever.
We don't discriminate.
No,
so
and
people
we'll
can come
title.
To the show if they're not Italian, you're saying?
They're invited.
Maybe.
We don't check.
All right.
I'm not working the door,
right.
So I can say
somebody
yes,
could slip in.
But we don't
not
really
enough vowels
know.
In your name.
Sorry, we canceled your reservation, Mrs. O'Leary. What? You know what happened.
You know how that happened.
Exactly how that happened.
We'll take a quick break and then more with Hannah Brown and, of course, our own Brian Noonan. They are two of the stars of Tony and Tina's Wedding. You want to go to TonyLovesTina.com. All the information is there. Stick around. More ahead. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
I sure hope the tarantella dance will be going on at Tony and Tina's wedding.
It will. The chicken dance will happen.
Oh, that
I know.
Shouldn't happen.
Tina
dollar
and,
dance.
Tina
the
and her
dollar
her
dance.
Girlfriends have a couple numbers produced and ready to go.
Is that how you get your wedding money?
Yeah.
Dollar dance. So bring singles. If
in
you're
one
coming.
Word, yeah.
Or hundreds.
Shouldn't
whatever.
It be the chicken Vesuvio dance?
That would make
I like that. I like how you think.
Think all about right. doing that.
All right, maybe we'll bring it in.
Two of the stars of a new production of Tony and Tina's Wedding, Hannah Brown, who plays Tina Vitale, and Brian Noonan, who plays Vinny Black, are in studio with us. You want to go to TonyLovesTina.com. All the information is there. And this starts at the end of September, right?
September
22nd.
Yes, is the opening date. So get your tickets now, and you can use either Noonan 10 or Hannah 10, and you'll save $10 a ticket. So
and
that's not bad.
It's scheduled to run through at least the end of the year and possibly beyond.
They're looking at it running as long as the last one, which was 15 years. I'm just hoping it makes it into January.
Right.
You know, so we'll see what happens. You never know. But I think that they're calling this a remount, which I'm not a theater pro. I don't know
Well, there's reboot that's really popular now.
Right.
A remount.
So they're remounting
the show.
You're
talking about the wedding night?
No. Well, that's a whole... No, that should be the initial mount, Wendy. You should never mount before the wedding night. I don't know what kind
really
of...
Really, as a Catholic.
I've insulted Tina.
I didn't think that was possible.
You better toughen up, honey.
Think about that sequel, Tony and Tina's Honeymoon, and whatever happens, happens.
Right?
That would be a good show to visit.
There you go.
That would be.
I'd love seeing that.
Can you make that audience participation?
That's,
interactive?
That's a little iffy. That's
just walk
dangerous.
Up and touch them like the stingrays in a pool?
Oh, my God.
No, you don't need that.
What about a gift? Do we need to bring a gift?
You're fixated on the gift. You can come without a gift.
You're the gift.
You know what you can do, though, Wendy?
You guys are pouring it on, really.
Because big. Tina's mom has, she wants an 80s theme. So if you want to come dressed in your finest 80s garb.
That's a good idea.
You could do that.
Absolutely.
That might be fun. Maybe you get a group. Do you still have your big shoulder pads from...
Oh, yeah. I'm not going to shave one side of my head like I had in the 80s.
You got to draw the line somewhere.
You're not going to commit fully to a night out?
I don't know.
That's a little too much for a Saturday night out.
She does have to draw the line, Hannah, and that line is drawn just above her ear. So.
You're right.
How big of a cast are we talking with Tony and Tina's wedding? How many people are in the show?
24,
I think. Oh, really? Is
that
huge?
Yeah. It's a good handful of us.
And you rarely see them all at the same time. They come on at different intervals.
Well, no, you're all in the reception hall. But, you know, if you're sitting at your table, you don't know who's going to come by. Some of the action might be happening right near you, while other action is happening across the Coliseum.
Yeah.
So you're not, every time you come, you're going to see something different. I think you guys said that before, because it depends where you're standing or sitting in the room as to what's happening right next to you.
Like, you could follow a different character every time, and you're going to experience something totally different.
Oh, that's
different.
So true.
Yeah.
A friend of mine who saw the show the first time it came around told me a story about how he had to use the restroom, and he went to the bathroom, and there was something going on in the bathroom, and he said, to this day, I don't know if that was part of the show or just some guys having an argument in the bathroom.
Well, have you seen that episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm with Tony and Tina's wedding?
Yes.
Where he's in the bathroom and he's like, Brad, cut it out. Like, it's me. It's Larry. Like, you can stop.
He's like, yeah, I don't know.
Like, it's being totally over the top, and I'm like totally excited to do that.
Oh, that's so funny.
I promise I will not hassle anybody in the bathroom.
Don't make that
promise. Vinny doesn't go to the bathroom while he's working.
Well, just wash your hands because you're dealing with the food.
I am. That's
true.
I'm handling all the food.
I want my guests to get food poisoning. Good gravy.
They won't get tomato.
Brian, when this becomes a huge hit.
When,
and
I like
your
the
name
you
is whispered around in theater circles as a Joseph Jefferson Award winner. What will your next play be, do you think? What are you aiming to do afterwards, theater-wise?
I've always wanted to play Lenny in Of Mice and Men.
Wouldn't that be a nice
role
for you?
With real rabbits. To just outrage the PETA people. I want to walk around snapping the necks of young bunnies.
Oh, wouldn't that be something?
It's horrifying. But that's how I dedicate to a part. That's how I really
method
get
acting.
Into it.
Yeah, that's
it's
very Daniel Day-Lewis, just to bring it back around.
Exactly.
Very
I just
method.
Walk around with the bunnies. Maybe I come in here with a bunny, kind of like a low-rate Goldfinger.
You don't need to do that.
Just stroke my buddy for the whole show.
You don't need to do
Wendy, that.
That
is not a euphemism.
Yeah,
I would actually have some sort of animal.
What's Tina's dress like? Beautiful,
gaudy, spectacular.
Yeah,
in one word, spectacular. Definitely an homage to the 80s, as in it's actually from the 80s. You can tell by the iridescent sequins.
Oh, right on.
But it's beautiful, I have to say. Like, honestly, in the grand scheme of 80s dresses, I lucked out. Like, it, you know, I look good.
Oh, well, all right.
Damn good.
It works.
Damn good.
It works.
You are going to have so much fun, you two.
It should be a blast, and everybody who comes will have a lot of fun. And again, you guys are welcome
to keep inviting us.
Who do you want to
so
be?
Kind.
You want to be cousin Vinny's cousin? Would you like to be Tina's great aunt?
Well, I mean, I get a great aunt.
Yeah.
What, Hannah? I'm sorry?
I said, I mean, I get a say. Who's
yeah, you
my
do.
Great
oh, sure
aunt.
You do.
Well, yeah, that's true. Hannah gets all, listen,
you don't
Tina
get to
gets,
pick your family.
Tina
that's
gets
actually
all the say.
True.
But you could be part of, you know, you could be, you know, Vinny's old business associate.
Yep.
You his silent
you know,
partner.
Maybe you could be the bathroom attendant. You know how they have that? And if Vinny goes to the bathroom, it would be Finiculi coli.
That is so. We invite Bill to come as a celebrity guest, and then we put him in the toilet
you,
the whole night.
Stay there for
well,
2 hours.
Mint? Would you like a mint?
Right.
Would you like a mint?
What about some hand lotion?
Have you dried your hands?
What would
you
do?
Like a mint?
Because the scene.
I don't know why that's your character.
I don't know, but that's how I would go with
why
that.
Why not?
Because it seems so realistic. Are there nights where you have to say to the audience, okay, we've all had fun and everything, but it's 2:30 in the morning. We have to close up shop.
I hope so.
I hope not.
I hope so.
I
you
hope
want it
not.
To go all
I'm
night,
in
Hannah?
It to win it. Yeah, it's my wedding. Who knows when I'll have a real one? Let's just live it up over and over and over again.
Just keep going.
Yeah, Energizer Bunny.
I cannot wait to see this. I really am going to come back and see both of you. So nice
well,
to meet you,
so.
Hannah Brown.
Oh, my gosh. So nice to meet you both. Thank you for having me.
We're thrilled to have you.
Thanks,
go
you guys.
See Hannah, of course, playing the role of Tina. And then Brian is playing the role of Vinny Black. It's part of the WGN Radio Host series.
Yes.
Ro Khan is going to do Funny Girl in December.
I've heard that, and I can't
fantastic.
Wait to see
he
him.
He is going
to
make great. The best Fanny Bryce.
Yep. I've seen rehearsals. It looks good. Great to see you guys. Thanks for
Thanks
coming
for
out.
Thanks for having
Thank
us
you.
In. Let's do the website one more time.
Yes,
can't we go?
HannahLovesTina.com.
That's right.
Yes.
That's how you get your tickets.
Break
Noon
away,
and
guys.
10 or Hannah 10.
Hannah
so
10.
Of money. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks,
Thank you.
News is next, and then more show. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
And you'll be in a world of pure imagination. Take a look and you'll see into your imagination.
Try not getting a lump in your throat during this. Try.
I can't even look at you during this.
It's too emotional.
I know.
It really is. It's too emotional.
I'll let you do the honors.
We received word on Monday that Gene Wilder, the great Gene Wilder, one of the greatest, I think, comic talents ever in film, had passed away at the age of 83. A very emotional moment, as Steve reported it in the news, and both you and I, as he started to say, an actor Gene Wilder, best known for his roles, both of us.
No.
We did not want to hear the news that we had lost Gene Wilder, but we did. One of the roles that Mr. Wilder was best known for was his portrayal of Willy Wonka in the classic film Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. One of those stars, Denise Nickerson, best known for her role in the movie, Violet Beauregard, joins us by way of the telephone right now. How are you, Denise?
Can it, you nit?
There you are.
Just a line from the film.
Yep.
No, it was a line from the film. It didn't come out quite right.
Don't worry.
Hi, I am. I've talked all over the world, I believe, since this happened. So forgive my voice. It's damn near gone.
Don't worry.
You're talked out. Saw the article on People Magazine and saw your tweet that said, "Rest in peace, Gene. You were so talented and kind-hearted. You will be sorely missed by so many. All of us have lost our Willy Wonka. Love, Violet."
Oh.
That's correct. We lost our Wonka. And in my mind, you know, I love Johnny Depp, and I've said this several times in the last 48 hours. I love Johnny Depp. He tried to fill big shoes with Roald Dahl's darker Wonka.
Yeah.
And Gene was so weird. You know, he could have gone all wrong with that, with this whole character, okay, because he was rude and, you know, arrogant and da da da. He could have really screwed it up. However, he walked that narrow line and made us all still love him. And when he gave Charlie the factory, I'm sitting in the movie theater in New York and I got tears streaming down my cheeks.
Denise, why do you think that is? Because that's the reaction I think most of us have, not just to the movie, but to that end scene in particular, when they're in the glass elevator and he's talking to Charlie and he does. He gives him the gift of the factory. What do you think it is about that moment that just resonates so much with everybody? What is it?
It's pieces of paper that had character lines on it, and a brilliant man took those lines and created an iconic character.
Sure.
The way he kicked the ball, the way he did the somersault, the way he did the cane for me and Julie going down the steps. So many of the nuances created that made him lovable. He was a jerk, but he had a tender side. That was the character that I believe that Gene created. It's certainly in my mind, he's Willy Wonka always. But he could have, you know, he could have come off as, you know, when I left the other movie, the second movie, I did not really love Willy Wonka at all.
Yeah.
And the beauty of this one is it all turned out good. And you just, when he gave Charlie the factory, it was amazing. I mean, it was amazing.
How old were you when you were in this movie, Denise? How old were you when you were Violet?
I was 13, near 14. I was the oldest. The rest were within months, so I wasn't like that much oldest, but I was a little older.
Yeah.
I was there for 6 weeks. I think Veruca was there for 8. It really depended upon your demise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
It really did. You know, your demise had everything to do with it. So, but, you know, Gene Wilder and Mel Stewart, who really was the fireball underneath Gene, the two of them were just full of ideas, and their minds were just going a million miles an hour. But Gene was such a quiet, introspective man. He spoke almost in a whisper, and I never saw him get frazzled.
How about
Mel
that?
Mel Stewart was very frazzled. He was very frazzled.
Yeah, he was the director of the film. Yeah.
Correct. And he was, that was his personality. Gene was the opposite. However, their minds were going. They had ideas of what they wanted this film to end up looking like.
Yeah.
And it did. And it was 1970. We had no CGI. You know, I was in that styrofoam ball for 9.5 hours.
Jeez.
The giant violet.
I was.
Yeah.
I came out of there, but I was going to deliver horses. Forget about quadruplets. And, you know, it just, I suffered. Okay, that I want to tell you that blue makeup.
Yeah.
I got back to New York City. I'm sitting in my class at school. All the kids start pointing at me and snickering. And I look at my best friend and I said, "What's going on?" She says, "You're blue." My neck. My neck, my ears, my face, and my hands were turning bright blue. This went on for 96 hours. I mean, I was getting, I almost had a panic attack. Am I going to stay this way? Is this a permanent affliction? They put blue food dye in the makeup.
Oh, no.
And my body was expelling it out through my pores.
Oh,
you're
my
turning
God.
Violet.
I did.
You
and
did.
I was Oprah's true first blue person, okay? That other guy didn't look anything like me. And if you watch it, the next time you watch it, because it is funny, there's absolutely nothing but misery on my face.
Oh, no.
When's the last time you watched it, Denise? I'm just curious.
Let's see. It was on, you know, I'll be flipping through probably 2 months ago.
Oh.
And I only watch bits and pieces of it. I don't watch the whole thing. But most of the time I end up looking at me with tomato soup and whatever. Roast beef, very high, you know. So
Denise.
I try to watch that.
I don't.
My face, it looks miserable.
Because oh, sure.
I am miserable.
Yeah. Denise, I don't know if you'll remember this, but a couple of years ago, all the kids assembled in Chicago, and I was lucky enough to interview you and three of the other actors. Michael Bolner was still in Germany. His plane was late, but you were here at these studios, at WGN Studios, and I asked you then, and the answer still is interesting to me. When that movie came out in 1971, it was not a big hit. It kind of came and went. People didn't really have much reverence for it. But later on, through repeat showings on cable and people seeing it, just wherever they had a chance, it became a classic. What changed? Why did people all of a sudden realize that movie to be such a classic?
I'm not really sure why, when it first came out, it didn't hit the public. Because it's a movie that both adults and children can watch on different levels. And I'm not sure if maybe Warner Brothers didn't push it enough, because I went to the premiere, and it was at a very, very small theater right by the Palace Hotel. I mean, nowhere down within Times Square. Mm-hmm. And I really think that the publicity hit it hard. Then what happened was ABC, CBS, and NBC, they started showing it at Easter time.
Yeah.
Thanksgiving and Christmas, and people started to see it. And when you see it, it just pulls you in. And the motto, I mean, so many parents tell us how, you know, they told their kid, you do that, you're going to end up looking like a blueberry.
Right.
You know, stuff like that. And the motto is so simple. Good things happen to good people. Bad things happen to bad people. That's why it lives on.
All right. We also told our kids you can't eat that much candy without getting cavities. Did you have any cavity problems after filming that movie?
13.
13 cavities.
13 cavities. 13 years old. Mind you, for the previous 6 weeks, I had been out in Lancaster, California, in the middle of the desert. This is 1970. Okay?
Yeah.
There's nothing for 100 miles. Doing one of the first movies of the week with Lee Grant and Jake Gyllenhaal. Throughout the movie, the girl blows bubbles.
Really?
With bubble gum. Yes. So I did 6 weeks of that. I was 36 hours changing the suitcase from summer clothes to winter clothes.
Yeah.
And got on the plane and spent another 6 weeks chewing bubbles. So I don't know what would happen to you.
Well, I'm surprised that movie didn't do better at the box office because I didn't go to many movies growing up, and I was about 8 or 9 when this came out, and yeah. I remember begging my grandma to take me, and that's what all the kids did. They begged their parents, you got to take me to see this movie. So I'm shocked that it didn't do better at the box office.
I am too, because it's got good lessons in it. It can be watched on two different levels. Candy is dandy, but liquor is quicker.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, you don't really hear that if you're a child. You're listening for the things that the 4-year-old can understand.
Yeah.
And candy is quicker, and you know, dandy and liquor is quicker. They're not listening to that, you know. But the adults do, so there's entertainment for that. There's always humor in me looking as miserable as I've ever looked in my whole life. And, of course, poor Michael Bolner going up the pipe.
Yep.
I think that Paris and Julie had it made, personally.
Their demises were a little more pleasant. You know, Denise, something I didn't realize when I saw the movie, when I saw Willy Wonka as a child, that I then realized later as an adult is, Mr. Wonka says things throughout the journey that you think are just him just saying things for the sake of saying things, but there is actually famous quotes that he gives out from some pretty learned people throughout the movie, but I didn't realize he was quoting all kinds of famous philosophers and things. Did you?
At the time, no. As an adult, of course.
Then you do later, yeah.
At the time, no. I mean, it was just something, it was his line. And then we moved on. You know, I was doing Broadway and commercials and voiceovers and theater ever since I was 6 years old.
Wow.
And so when I was doing Getting Ready to Do the Bubblegum movie with Lee Grant and Gigi Young.
Yeah.
And then this, I had been on Dark Shadows for 2.5 years.
Whoa, I didn't know
we
that.
We loved that show.
Well, yes, yeah, so I had been on that for 2.5 years, and Dan Curtis would not give me the 3 months off.
So, wait, truly, Denise, who were you on Dark Shadows? Who did you play?
Amy Collins and Nora.
Are you the one who had Rose Cottage, the little dollhouse, on the show?
No.
That was not you. Okay.
Where I am the one that with David found Quentin.
Oh, yeah, that was you.
Quentin's theme. That's when Quentin's theme came out on the 8th. Remember we only had AM radios?
Yeah, yeah.
AM transistor radios. And Quentin's theme hit top 10 or something. I can't remember now.
That was David Selby, correct?
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct.
Wow.
You know, Denise, hold your thought for 1 second. We have to take a quick break, and then we'll wrap this up. Denise Nickerson, who played the part of Violet Beauregard in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, and we'll get her take on the passing of Gene Wilder and talk about all this trivial stuff. You got to... Did you tell her about your vows last
no,
time
I haven't
she was
mentioned
in?
Them.
Tell her
I
when we come
that.
Back.
All right.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
We learned on Monday that Gene Wilder had died at the age of 83. Seriously, one of the greatest comic actors of all time. Denise Nickerson knows that. She played the role of Violet Beauregard in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. And we have so much time and so little to see. Well, strike that, reverse it. So let's talk to Denise for just another minute or two. Denise, when you were in the middle of it, when you were shooting Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, did you know that this thing would just live on forever and change so many people's lives?
None of us had a clue. I actually thought when he broke out into song in the Wonkatania, he pulled out that Mel Brooks character.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen that before, and my mouth dropped to the ground, and I thought, oh, great, nobody's going to come and see this movie. So good thing I wasn't the producer. we had absolutely no idea it was going to grow into what it's grown into, and you know, I'm the one who got the golden ticket. I'm the lucky one, because I've been able to enjoy this, and the first thing people do when they know who I am is they smile. So how lucky am I to have provided that smile for people? I'm very blessed.
Well, we're very blessed to talk to you, and really that movie Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory really touched all the souls of little kids everywhere, but it really touched the soul of my partner, Bill Leff, and he included a lovely thing in his vows to his wife on his wedding day.
I said it in our wedding vows, Denise. I said of my wife, in my favorite movie, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, at the end, Willy Wonka says to Charlie Bucket, "Never forget what happened to the little boy who got everything he wanted. He lived happily ever after, and that's how you make me feel."
Oh, my God. Goodness, do you know how that came about?
No, how?
The actual scriptwriter, whose name escapes me right now, had finished. They were done. And Mel's doing this last scene with Peter and Gene, and he needed something. He says, "I just can't end the movie, fade out." So he called this guy. We didn't have laptops in those days or even cell phones. He called this guy who was up in Vermont in the cabin, and there was one payphone nailed to a tree within this gigantic wooded area.
Yeah.
Phone rings. I picks it up, and Mel says, "I need a closing line. I need an end line." And the guy stood there, and he thought, and he says, "Well, you never forget the boy who got what the hell is wanted. You lived heavily up, you had happily after. And Mel said, "Thanks, bye." And is that amazing?
That is phenomenal.
Well, thank you for sharing that. You know, if you guys get together for upcoming conventions or something, please keep in touch with us and come visit us in the studio, Denise.
I certainly will. I've got Kevin's information, so.
Perfect.
In the meantime, keep Chicago happy.
We'll do our best. Thank you, Denise, for keeping us happy for all these years.
You guys are great.
Oh, you're the best.
Thank
you
so much.
How about that? Isn't that something?
How about that?
Yeah. All right. That again, Denise Nickerson, who played the role of Violet Beauregard in Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. We'll take a quick break. Steve,
candy's dandy.
Candy is dandy, Wendy.
Liquor is quicker.
I guess. A quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
All right, it's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder. Thank you, Steve. Donald Trump has arrived in Mexico. He was invited.
Dios mío.
Yeah, no kidding.
That's what you'll hear a lot of later.
About to speak?
Well, the meeting is wrapped up, and we were given indications that he was about to make some comments. There are a couple of podiums set up, but I'm listening in my other ear, and I'm not hearing much action yet. So if he comes to the podium fairly soon, we'll drop in and hear what he has to say.
All right, sounds good. Thank you for monitoring that. So we talked to Denise Nickerson.
Yes.
And there have been some crazy texts.
Yeah. Many people are suggesting that Denise had been drinking. And I don't know that to be true.
We don't know that to be true.
Here's one. Was Denise in the movie Willy Wonka and the Vodka Factory?
Oh, ouch,
zing. That's not nice. This person suggested that maybe she was drinking blueberry vodka before the interview. That's not nice.
Listen.
Come on.
She's not that much older than us, though, really.
No, she's a few years older, just a couple years older.
And
but, you know, to her defense, she has been giving interviews almost nonstop for 2 or 3 days now, so that's going to cash in your voice a little bit.
Cashed is could be used in various ways. Did she do a lot of work after this? Because I can imagine, you know, like 13 years old, you're in this movie. I can't even say a blockbuster movie.
It was not a blockbuster when they made it. It was not.
Does she get, I didn't want to ask her this, but does she get any kind of residuals or anything now?
All right. My guess is that
I didn't want to make her more bummed out about things.
I know.
Because I bet not.
My guess is probably not.
Yeah.
Residuals for most actors, like residuals that made you fairly wealthy, didn't come about until James Garner was in the Rockford Files. He's the one that kind of changed.
He is the one.
He made it so that actors who had a pretty good career for a while could live on through the residuals. Prior to that, you really didn't see much money come your way after the movies or TV shows hit.
Well, I think of Shirley Temple.
Right.
All the movies she made.
Right. Now, she was paid, for being a child, she was paid very well in her era, but every time they would show the movie on television, it's not like they were
sending
her checks for $100,000 or anything like that.
Do you still get paid for Major League 1 and 2?
Yes.
Seriously?
As a matter of fact, tomorrow I'm going to bring you in a check that my wife got a check for one of her movies over the weekend, and I'm going to bring it in and impress you like crazy.
I can't wait to see it.
Wait till you see the amount. I'm going to have to make sure that armed guards bring me from the parking lot into the studio because of the size, the enormity of this check.
I am not making fun, because Major League 1 and Major League and Major League 2 were awesome movies. You were great.
Thanks.
You showed me the check the last time you got paid for it, and I have to be honest with you, the stamp costs more.
I get a check for those about every 4 to 6 months, and then there's other TV stuff that I've done. And again, they come about every 4 to 6 months. And rarely are they over $12, but the last few have been under 20 cents. They've all been for 18 and 19 and 20 cents.
Forgive me for saying this, but why don't they just have an account going for you? And when you hit $1...
Then send me, PayPal me $1, right? I can't figure that out
either.
It
doesn't make sense. Everyone's losing money on this deal.
Can I tell you the funniest thing? I got a check about 3 or 4 years ago for 11 or 12 cents. I don't remember which.
God.
And I just kind of went, and I threw it on a shelf because it's just
11
or 12 cents.
You're not going to go to the bank for 11 or 12 cents.
So then every 3 months, I got a notice from SAG-AFTRA. That's the union that sends you the checks, saying that their records show that I have still not cashed that check.
Right, because they're only 90 days. It's only good for 90 days.
It's messing up their bookkeeping. So not only did I get a check for a very small amount of money and they spent a stamp on that, I got four more mailings over the next few years saying, could you do us a favor and please go to your bank and cash that, because you're messing up our bookkeeping.
We're trying
something
to
awful.
Balance our account.
Right. We want to keep things happy, and you're really messing this up.
We're off by 24 cents, so you and someone else is not cashing their check.
Yes. Stuart Margolin has also not cashed a Love American style check. If you see Stuart Margolin, could you tell him you got to cash these checks? We're not just sending them for our health, you know.
All right, we'll bring in that check tomorrow for your wife's
acting
career.
You're going to be very impressed.
Let's take a quick break. We'll see. Steve Bertrand is monitoring the Donald Trump visit to Mexico. And, you know, we need to keep you covered right here. All the news, all the conversation, we've got it all at 720 WGN. All right, it's Bill, it's Wendy, and no movement from the Trump camp right now.
He's not speaking just yet.
And he may not.
He may not. We don't know.
So, you know, we were told or given guidance that the meeting was wrapping up, but I just don't know yet. I've seen a couple pictures of the podium. I'm listening to the where it would be, and I'm not hearing much activity just yet.
Steve, I'm curious. The president of Mexico invited both he, Donald Trump, and Hillary Clinton to come and meet with him, I believe, right, separately. I don't think the invitation wanted them at the same time. But why would it be, of the two candidates, I would almost think that Hillary Clinton would be the first one to bite on this instead of Donald Trump?
Well, it's perfect optics for Donald Trump. You know, this is a big immigration day, so he can look like a state leader by going to meet with another head of government and, you know, brief him on his immigration plans and then come back to the U.S., give this speech. They'd have, you know, B-roll pictures of him meeting with Peña Nieto and
shaking hands,
it
smiling.
It could look good for him. Right. Now, Peña Nieto has been very critical of Donald Trump.
Yeah,
very critical.
I know.
So,
with good reason.
Yeah. And people in Mexico certainly don't look favorably upon Donald Trump. So it'll be interesting to see how the president of Mexico comes out and reacts to this meeting.
Now, of late, he has been a little less enthusiastic. Is that fair to say?
It's very difficult to say. I mean, if you listen to everything he and his surrogates are saying, it sounds like, you know, earlier in the campaign, he was saying he was going to take every illegal here, put him in had a deportation force,
right,
and take them out of the country. I think it's pretty clear by what they've been saying in the past few weeks that that's not going to be the case.
And what about the wall plan? Is that in?
He's not going to. He's going to. Yeah, he's
just
going to stick
ledge
with the wall.
No, no, but full wall, just a ledge now.
Well, but, you know, again, they start to use different sorts of language that Rudy Giuliani has said, well, we're not necessarily talking about a physical wall. It could be a technological wall.
Oh, God.
So,
a firewall.
Well, you know, like electric monitoring, right, and things like that. So, you know, we'll see what he says tonight. And you know,
I'm dying
he changed
to know.
He changed himself a couple times just last week. So,
but
don't,
isn't that
I
interesting?
Don't think, I wouldn't imagine what we're here tonight is necessarily definitive.
One of the very first linchpins of his campaign, though, was a wall that seemed, unless everybody was reading it wrong, to be an actual physical wall. And when you'd upset him, he'd say that wall just got higher, and Mexico's going,
right,
to pay for this.
Going to pay for it.
And his supporters were all
they wanted
into
the wall.
The wall.
Right.
They're going to be disappointed if there's no wall.
Well, that's why I think you'll probably see him ease up on the forced deportation of 12 million people.
Yeah.
But stick with the rhetoric about the wall.
Yeah.
That's a little easier than the deportation force. We'll see. So I think when they're talking about a softening, that's what they're talking about.
Okay.
But then he hardened his softening.
He did, didn't he?
Yeah.
He did. He's like that magic shell stuff you can put on ice cream.
You have to change sometimes. You have to change your opinions.
You do, Wendy, but he changed his opinions in like a matter of 12 hours and based on applause from an audience. So we'll see how he does here. I mean, he kind of moved toward the softening and then, you know, was getting some pushback and said, no, it's a hardening of the softening. So we'll see, Wendy.
Oh, and then as far as we know, Steve, is Hillary Clinton, I know the invite still stands, but is she going to take the president of Mexico up on the offer, and is she going to come in, or do we not know yet?
It's a good question. I would bet against it. I mean, it doesn't look good for her now to be following Donald Trump.
Yeah, I guess not.
She's been Secretary of State. She certainly has met with plenty of foreign leaders in her time. So, you know, it's an important issue and an important neighbor, so there might be value in the meeting, but I just think the optics of it would be unlikely that she would go down there.
One of the fears in Donald Trump's meeting with the president of Mexico today is that he could potentially say something incredibly damaging. As far as we know right now, that didn't happen, did it today?
No, not that I know of. And I mean, I don't think he's in a position to say anything damaging.
At this point?
No.
All right.
Can I tell you another story?
Sure.
Yeah. Get this. Tommy La Stella is starting for the Cubs tonight.
Who's that?
He's the guy who wouldn't report. The Cubs sent him down to the minors, and he would not report to the minors.
Oh, yeah.
Just got a press release from the Cubs that they've recalled Tommy La Stella, and he's in the starting lineup for the Cubs as they wrap up their series tonight.
All right, here's what that's surprising on a couple fronts. Number one, a major league team can expand their rosters from 25 to 40 guys as of, I think, September 1st, which is tomorrow. So there was a lot of speculation. Most of it was that the Cubs would bring him back after September the 1st. But if he's starting tonight, something must have happened. They must have sent somebody down to bring him up a day early.
And right-handed pitcher Spencer Patton.
Oh, okay.
And was he the guy who said if he's getting sent back down,
he's going to retire.
Yeah, I missed. I didn't see that he was playing in AAA again.
He did, as of,
about a week ago, maybe a little more longer than a week ago. He did finally report. Somebody talked to him. Somebody in Cubs management talked to him and said, you know, you are in our picture. We don't want to lose you.
Let's ask Kevin Powell. He's here.
Yeah, Kevin will know.
Yeah, Tommy La Stella, the gist of it was he was sent down to AAA. He wasn't happy about it. Almost sort of had a breakdown, kind of. He went home to New Jersey, was contemplating. He basically said he didn't want to play for anybody but the Cubs. This went on for a couple weeks. He finally budged. They sent him to AA. Then he was back up in AAA for, as Bill just said, I think past week or so. So he played about 2 weeks in the minors between Double and AAA. And the Cubs said they wanted to bring him back. They did say, you know, he's going to have to clear some air with his teammates after pulling that, especially when you're in the middle of a season like the Cubs are having. And to pull something La Stella did was...
I think it
rubbed a lot of people the wrong way. I mean, look, the rosters expand tomorrow to the 40-man for the final month, up from the 25-man roster. So he knew after a few weeks he was going to be brought back up. So he had to go do his time for a couple weeks. And suck it up, little Wrangler. And just a few days after, there was an injury on the major league team. He could have been brought right back up. So to cause a sort of a scene, drama, whatever you want to call it, was kind of out of line. But here he is. He's back, and the Cubs are looking to give a lot of their starters rest. So he's going to start at second tonight. Ben Zobrist out of the lineup, and La Stella will bat, he'll bat seventh. So.
And more on that during Rowan Anna's show. Steve, did you want to say something in response to Kevin?
Yeah, have a great day, Gav.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
Oh, nice.
Have a good one.
That's kind of nice of Steve to throw
that.
It was
very Costanza of him. Have a good day, Jerry.
It's like he was reading that. It's like he wrote that down in a statement.
I think Judy's kicking him out of the seat.
That's very possible. That's fair. But, Kevin, I have to say, I've always liked him, and he's one of those guys that's one of those, if not a regular everyday player, and he might be on another major league team. He could easily start for other teams. We're very, very wealthy in talent right now. But, you know, you don't want to lose a guy like that. He could be valuable down the run.
Right. I think that the Cubs locker room, where there's such little ego, I mean, they've pretty much weathered any sort of drama this season. Not that there's been much, but they've been able to. So if they're going to be able to withstand anything, it's something like this. But La Stella is no question has plenty of worth to be. He's batting .295 at the time of the demotion, which was sort of the reason where you can kind of see where he's coming from. I mean, there's nothing really else he can do, but it's just baseball. There's only so many spots on the roster.
That's right.
But it's .295. He batted well in the minors. He's the ultimate utility man. He's one of those type guys where he'll play the infield. Joe Maddon can put him in the outfield if they need. But this last month here is really giving the starters some rest for the final push and for the postseason.
We're glad he's back. La Stella. All right, we'll take a quick break and then find out what Ronan have. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.